Good evening. I'm glad to be back in Toronto after 2 months for the second time. The first time was fantastic. We just recently put the previous lecture that we had on my website and have tremendous response, Baruch Hashem. So if you want to listen to it tonight or tomorrow, it's called An Amazing Night in Toronto. You'll locate it in the list. And it was really an amazing night. Fantastic night. Tonight, I was asked to combine between two different topics to make it more interesting to different kinds of people that we have here. The main topic tonight we're going to speak... The main topic tonight we're going to speak about life after life, life after death. But since we are in a very, very unique, special situation right now in the world, we have to address some of the problems that we are facing according to the Torah, according to the prophecies in Judaism. For those who know me, for already 2 years ago, I started to speak in my lectures in New York. Most of my lectures are in New York. I live in New York. So I started to tell people what's going to happen. And when I started to say it, everything looked very successful in the economy, in real estate, in the stock market. 2 years ago was the highest of the highest, the best. But as you know, the nature of the people, the human being, tends to live most of the time in illusion, not always realizing its real situation. And I just saw it coming, especially when the Torah told us that we are in the most critical time since the creation of the world. To start, we received the Torah from God, the Jewish nation, 3,320 years ago. In a very famous public event called Mount Sinai, Har Sinai, Mahamad Har Sinai, the creator of the world for the first and the last time in history until this moment came down into this materialistic world and revealed himself to approximately 50 million people. Nowhere in a history such an event ever took place. Not only never took place, if you watch the lecture that I gave last time here in Toronto, plus I have some DVDs here if you want after the lecture speaking about that topic, one of the scientific proof that I use to prove that the Jewish Torah is the only divine book in history is that the Torah took a major impossible risk against all odds. One of the verses in the Torah promised that even though there's going to be many, many different religions and cults, it will never start with the story of a group of a people, which means it will never be 5 people, 10 people, 100 people, never. Always one person shows up and claims that God or the angel gave him a book or gave him the truth, and he's the new prophet, he's the new representative of God. The reason that we, the Jewish people, have a special protection from imitators, because God's wish is that his children, the Jewish nation, as he refers to us in the Torah, you are my children, I chose you from all the nation to be mine, I'm giving you a list of restrictions which I'm not interested. You would be like all the other Gentiles. You have obligations much more than them, but you have a huge reward. They also have reward if they're righteous, according to their level. But you are special to me. That's a list of restrictions, very, very strict, by the way. And if there's one thing that gets God very, very upset, is when his children are trying very hard to imitate the Gentiles. And unfortunately, it's an epidemic. Almost every Jew in the world is doing everything he can to look like the people from the posters. or from the television, whatever, not knowing who he is. When a person doesn't cherish himself, doesn't appreciate who he is, what gift he received, then of course he doesn't really know the purpose of his life even. But going back to what I just said, the Torah promised that even though there will be imitators and they'll come and bring supposedly a new truth, it will always be a story of one person, and he will never be able to bring even one witness to his story. For those who know history, 80,000 times somebody came and started a new cult. Some of those cults became famous religions like Islam, Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, hundreds of millions of people. Most of those cults stay very small, hundreds of people, perhaps thousands of people, some of them disappeared already. One religion was accepted in front of millions of witnesses, all the Jews in that generation, 3,320 years ago, they heard Moshe and God having a dialogue. Everything that appears in the Torah in Parashat Yitro definitely happened. If you have doubts about it, and I accept it, it's no problem, just watch my DVD. I have in English, I have in Hebrew. You will never ever have doubts if the Jews really received the Torah in public or not. It will be very clear, I promise you. Let's move on. So after the Jews received the Torah, three of the mitzvot from the Torah, there are 613 commandments, 613, because the body of a person is created with 613 parts, 248 organs, 365 ligaments, which this is exactly the way the Torah was given. The Torah has 248 positive mitzvot. Each mitzvah connects to one of the organs of the body, 248 organs, 248 positive mitzvot. And then there are 365 ligaments, 365 restrictions. As the Torah was given to the Jews, three commandments from the 613 refer to a restriction not to communicate with the deceased people. You should be very careful not to bother the dead people, not to call them into this world, not to speak to their spirit, not to disturb them and bring them into this place. Now we have to remember, we are talking about a very primitive world, 3,320 years ago. We didn't have parapsychology like today everywhere in the world. We didn't have internet that almost, there are thousands of websites speaking about scientific proof there's life after death. We didn't have all that. A nation is receiving a book for the first time, they're hearing the voice of the creator of the world, and they're opening the book, and they're reading that now, from now on, they're not allowed to call the dead people and get information from them. Obviously, the question that rises right away, how can it be? We never thought we can wake up a dead body and speak to him. Is it possible to speak to a dead person and get information from him? On the other hand, we have a divine book that we all saw, who just gave it to us. He doesn't make mistakes. The divine origin that created this world, God, Elohim, there's all kinds of names in the Torah. He is not capable of making human errors. One of the proofs I use in my lectures always, and it's always working, is that if you find in a book one human error, then it's an indication that it's not a divine book. You cannot continue to invest time in a book that you just found a mathematical mistake, geographical mistake, a historical mistake, contradiction between one chapter to another, mixing up dates, mixing up generation orders, and so forth and so on. One of the things that everyone was trying to find mistake in the Torah, in nature, in geography, in biology, and I never found any mistake. The only book that have tons of prophecies is the Jewish Torah. No other book in the history, with no exception, gave any prophecy, with one exception, that Christianity, not in the New Testament, later, after, about 200 years after, the Christian church were promising their believers that the Jews will never return to the Holy Land. And obviously, we returned to the Holy Land. The Jews came back to the Holy Land starting in 1880, about 130 years ago, a massive immigration to Israel. And today we have about 6 million Jews sitting in Israel. So obviously, one prophecy they gamble the Christians to give, it turns to be false. In Islam, you don't have even one prophecy. Even though the Muslim calls Muhammad Prophet Muhammad, and they die for him, and they murder for him now, stop all over the world. When they come up there, they'll be very disappointed that the one that they call a prophet never gave even one prophecy in the entire Quran. Hard to believe, but that's a fact. No prophecy, no vision of the future in the Quran, nowhere. Never been and never will be. Now, three of the mitzvot in the Torah refers, you should not communicate with the dead people. Before I'm going into the information of life after death, this is the time now to prepare us for what the Torah speaks about the end of days. When I say the end of days, I don't mean necessarily that this earth will be disappearing. It could stay here. We are talking days of Mashiach, when the prophet spoke about the Mashiach is coming to save the Jewish nation. There is a list of conditions that the Oral Torah gave us approximately 2,000 years ago. What is going to happen before the Mashiach will arrive? And if you search inside the list, you'll be very, very surprised. I have a whole lecture about it in the website. I don't have time because it's more than 2 hours lecture, just this topic. But there's a list of information that when it was written 2,000 years ago, there was not even 1% chance that something like this will happen. It's impossible. And here today we find after 2,000 years that everything the Gemara told us went one by one in the right order. And today we are in a generation that we are facing tremendous things in the world. We are facing a big war between the descendants of Ishmael, which is the Muslims, the Arabs, to the descendants of Esav, which is the Christians, the Europeans and the Americans and the Russians. It's all descendants of one person, Esav. Big wars between them. Terrorism all over. We are now in a time that one of the conditions the Gemara says that the Mashiach will not appear until everyone will be broke, which means people will not have nothing. All the money they save, all the investment they make, everything they prepare, all will become mud. Every Jew in the world will get to a point before it will happen that he will realize, I have nobody to count on. No one. Not my parents-in-law, not my friends, not my rabbi, not my partner, not my business, not my health, not my talent, nothing whatsoever. Everybody will realize. That's why we say 3 times a day in the prayer, V'aya b'yom ahu yeh Hashem echad u'shmo echad. There will be one God with one name, no arguments, no religions and cults anymore. They will realize the mistake they made. The arguments will be over. And everybody will seek to run after the real truth. And after the Mashiach come, some of the Gentiles, the righteous goyim, that either they save Jews, they risk their life for the Jewish nation, or they love the Jews, or they help the Jews, or in many, many things, like a vote, they vote for the Jewish nation, they help the Jewish nation. Like just giving you an example, this Indian woman that risked her life to save this Jewish baby. People like this, plus all the Gentiles that keep their 7 laws, they have 7 laws that they are obligated to keep, those non-Jews will be saved as well. And they will admire, it's not the first time, because already this kind of goyim, they're already realizing the importance of the Jewish nation. But at that time, they will seek for the Jews to teach them Torah. Just give you an example. I've been here in Toronto 2 months ago, as I told you. I think it was 2 days before Yom Kippur. And then, you have no idea how many viewers we have now from Toronto watching in the website. You know, it goes from one person to another. The interesting part is that I get tens of phone calls and emails from non-Jews from Toronto. All kinds of Gentiles. Indians, American, French. Some of them I don't even know what they are. And they're watching the website and they admire the Torah. You should see, some of them begging to convert. begging to convert after listening to some of the lectures, mamash. They don't give up. Where should I go? One of them already went to the Beis Din. You know, it's not an easy process. That's this kind of goyim, and the time after Mashiach come, the Torah says it's going to be unbelievable war in the world. It's called Gog Magog. If you want to know exactly the details, only if you're very brave, please tonight or tomorrow open the book of Zachary 14. Zachariah Yudaled. The entire two pages over there describe the final last war. What's going to happen in the war? In few words, it's going to be, without a doubt, a tremendous atomic war. And it says over there that two-thirds of the world will be destroyed in a second. In few seconds, I should say. The Vilna Gaon, 250 years ago, wrote, he said to his student, actually, that the last war will take 9 seconds. In his generation, there was no rifles. If you needed to shoot, if you wanted to shoot, they only started with rifle with some powder. You put some powder and you shoot a bullet. You shoot, that's it. That's how it was, very primitive. He said the last war will take 9 seconds. Today we understand that it's possible. Then nobody could dream that the entire world, in a generation that people went to war with horses and sword, nobody could imagine a world go to a final step who will take 9 seconds. But before we even go to this, it can take years, it can take, who knows how, nobody really knows. One of the unbelievable things that happened in this generation, there are many, many people, some of them rabbis, some of them just ordinary people, each one of them act as a prophet. So I want to assure everyone to understand, no one is a prophet. We don't have prophets in this generation. We have very big, important tzaddikim rabbis. Some of them have sometimes Ruach HaKodesh. It's a fact. Sometimes, when they think they know the future, they're not correct, because they're not prophets. We don't have prophets for 2,000 years already. Why should we have prophets now? So nobody really knows when it's going to happen and how exactly it's going to happen. But one thing we know for sure, the Torah was always right. And the Torah told us there will be a generation called Acharit Hayamim. Acharit Hayamim means ends of days. And the Torah gave few possibilities. The Tanakh, the 24 books of Judaism, that's what we call the Tanakh, 24 books. Five of them is the Torah, and the rest is the Nevi'im and the Kings. It says few possibilities, how the end gonna be. Which one of them will come through, we don't know. Why we don't know? Because God's interest was that nobody will know the end. Nobody will know exactly how it's going to be. Nobody will know when it's going to be. Nobody. Why? Because if somebody will know it, it will eliminate the free choice that God gave people in this creation. And if there is no free choice, the purpose of the creation is being defeated completely. There's no point of keeping the world. Remember, the Torah told us in Sefer Dvarim, it appears a few times, that God is putting us here in a test. What's the test? I'm giving you the good and the bad, the life and the dead, and you should choose the good. You should choose the life. You can choose the dead. You can choose the bad. People can choose drugs. People can choose to steal, to kill, all kinds of things. It's in their hand. Later, they're going to receive either good for the good that they did, and they receive bad for the bad that they did. No exception. Everything was mamash like computer, precise. You get exactly what you deserve, for good or for bad. There are ways to correct things, and that's the purpose of all these lectures, to wake up the people, to reevaluate their life, to see to what direction they're heading to. Maybe their direction is completely the opposite of the truth. Maybe they live in a mistake. They live in a complete mistake, they are heading to the opposite direction. If they read the Torah once in their life, most likely right away they realize that every second of their life is a mistake. And this is the majority of us, unfortunately. I always like to say, I hate to say, but I say it all the time, that for 14 years that I'm giving lectures, I never found yet one Jew, American, Israeli, Persians, Bukharian, Russian, whatever you want, never found one non-religious Jew that read the Torah once in his life carefully. Not even one. When I'll find the first one, I'm going to rethink over if I should mention it or not. But so far, I'm so confident with what I say because it's years of experience. Almost every lecture I ask, Anybody here, before you come to criticize the Torah and the prophets, or the Gemara, or the Talmud, or the Midrashim, or anything, did you ever read it once in your life carefully, just to understand the simple meaning of it? Before we heading to understand the secrets and all the other things, just the simple understanding. Did you ever read it once in your life? The answer always is not really. I read here and there, I heard some lectures in my life, I read some books, but I never read it from the beginning to the end, word by word, to understand everything. Never. In that case, why are you coming to argue? Doesn't make sense. I'm not a doctor. I will never dare to go and argue with doctors in their conventions. I don't know anything about brains. I know a little. It will be a joke to come and argue with the doctors that deal with brains for 30, 40 years in their life and made brain surgeries and have some success in their job. And I will argue with them in 5 seconds. Everybody will know this is a complete fool for two reasons. One, he doesn't know anything about medicine. Second, it's even worse that he come and dare to argue. When a person, a clever person, doesn't open his mouth in subjects that he doesn't have any knowledge in. But today we seem to live in a generation that everyone is a genius about everything. Everything is a genius about economy and business and politics. And especially, every Jew is a perfect dol hador, rabbi. They know everything. They have an opinion here, God doesn't exist, the two Chabadnikim just died in India. No, you still believe that God exists? If they read once in their life Sefer Dvarim, now they would believe even much harder than before. Why? Because the Torah already spoke about all these incidents. The Torah explained why righteous people die. The Torah explained what's that life. Soon we're going to go into the subject, you're going to see, you will have an understanding a little bit about life. That this is only one step in many, many reincarnations that we've been here before. It's only one step. It's a continuation of what he used to do 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. It's all the train moving from one station to the other. Or you're connecting from one train to another. That means different bodies. You're continuing a journey. Therefore, the people that are with you in this train, they are not the same people that were with you in the previous train. They have no idea what you did in the other train. But they analyze what happened to you, they judge it, and they know better than the Creator. And the truth is, they have no idea what's going on. I would like to start. After the lecture, if I have more time, I will answer about the situation. I prefer, if you're curious, to just go into my website, divineinformation.com. The last 6 or 7 lectures that I gave in New York, I'm speaking about the economy. I already spoke more than a year and a half, 2 years ago, about the collapse of all the banks. When the banks were booming, their stock was $60, $70, $130. Today it's $2, $3, $4, $5. I already told them that all the financials in the entire world will collapse to nothing. One after the other will go bankrupt. People used to laugh at me. Not that I never claim that I know the future. I'm telling you clearly, I do not know anything about the future. No, I don't have visions, don't have power, not mekubal, not mystical, none of these things. Common sense. Balloon, you blow out a balloon, it's becoming bigger and bigger and bigger, but it's on an illusion. It's like the Indian bread. Did you ever see an Indian bread in an Indian restaurant? It looks like a huge piece of bread. You take your finger, you make a hole in it, all the steam comes out, it falls down, it becomes the size of a little gum. Why? It looks huge. That's how the economy was here. Now, America is the heart of the world. First the heart gets affected, and then the rest of the body, then the fingers, then the legs, then the head, everything else. Once the heart got hurt big time, it's just a matter of time that Israel will follow and Europe and China will not have customers and the Arab will not have who to sell their oil to. And that's going to lead to a complete mess in the world. What we say in Hebrew, andrelamusia, complete mess. Problems, rising of crimes, anti-Semitism, because the Jews are always, it's always their fault, no matter what they do. They try to help the economy, it's their fault the economy went down. They go against the economy, it's also their fault. Well, no matter what, in a history, the Jews were always the victim of the problems that the non-Jews have. It's a fact, cannot argue, history shows. No matter where the Jews were, no matter how poor they were, whether they were wealthy or not, they were always the reason for all their problems. And when the non-Jews don't have enough bread for their children, they are looking for someone that will give them the money. And if this someone will not voluntarily give them the money, they'll take it. Which means, if you check the history, what happened in the last 3,000 years in the history of the Jewish people, no matter what country they lived in, one day they decided that you cannot live here anymore. You have X amount of time to leave. That's in the best scenario. Leave your houses, you're not allowed to sell it, no one is allowed to buy from the Jews, you're not allowed to sell your houses, you're not allowed to sell your businesses, you're allowed to take X amount of belongings and leave X amount of time. That's what happened to the Jews in Iran, approximately 30 years ago. The Iranian Jews, they couldn't take their buildings from Iran, they couldn't take their stores, they couldn't take the merchandise. Some of them own streets in Iran, but they cannot go and claim it back. Also, in Germany, before the Holocaust, in Poland, in Russia now, they had to escape. Why? You cannot stay. One more day you stay, that's it, you'll never be able to go. It happened in Spain 500 years ago, it happened in Portugal, it happens in Israel when they evicted the Jews to Babylon and to Egypt, and history always is a repeat. That's the bad news. The good news is that we are going now to live very simple life. We don't like to live simple. We like to live fancy. We like fancy cars. We like fancy homes. We like fancy food. We like vacations. We like to do as less as possible. If it was up to us, we lay out on a couch all day with our computer and do nothing in our life. That's what, if it was up to us. But we need now to be re-educated for the purpose of life. The purpose of life, we were not put here just to enjoy the physical world. It's an illusion. We're going to go down to earth, whether we want or not. We'll become humble. It will be times of financial difficulties. There will be millions of unemployed people, new ones. In Israel, they said on the news a few days ago that by the end of the year, 50% of the people, of the businesses, will go bankrupt. 50%. They say on the news in Israel, not religious. The bankers in Israel, all the banks in Israel are fighting for their lives. Maybe the government will save Bank HaPoalim, because it's the major bank, but the other ones, it's a big doubt if they'll survive. And there will be all the high-tech industry is vanished, finished. All of them got fired now. All the Israeli billionaires that were very famous in the last 8-9 years, and you know their names, I'm sure, one by one in the last few months went bankrupt. If you want, come after the lecture, I tell you their names. All the famous ones, include the biggest one that you heard their name on the news, they're all bankrupt completely. The banks are taking their buildings, taking their cars, they're fighting. The people that hold stock in their companies are fighting against them. They're in serious problems. Where is it going to lead us? To one point. To one situation. What's the situation? We finally will call our Father in heaven and will say to him, that's it, we realize there is nobody to count on besides you. You are our Father, please save me. And once we're going to do it, then the salvation will begin. It happens few times in history. One first time that it happened was in Egypt. When the Jews were working for 210 years in Egypt like slaves, they beating them up, they killing their babies day after day, night after night, 16, 17 hours a day with whips, they beating them up, driving them crazy mentally. After 210 years, pay attention to the amount of time. The Jews, the Torah says, Vatal Shavatam El Hashamayim. They were walking and screaming, where are you, God, save us? The Torah says, why did they get saved? Vata'al Shavatam El Hashamayim means in English, their scream went express to heaven. And God listened to it and eventually gave up on the punishment that they got and released them. You know the miracles, I don't have to tell you. That's first time. Second time in Persia, in the time of Haman, have a signed verdict by the king, which never in a history was canceled. Never. to kill all the Jews in 127 countries, not only in Iran, in Persia, all the countries that they occupied and they controlled, that means they wouldn't leave one Jew alive. It was the final verdict. 3 days the Jews fast, they go out, they sit on the street, they scream, the kids leave the yeshivot, they come sit in the middle of Shushan. It's like 42nd Street in Manhattan, Fifth Avenue. Thousands of Jews wearing sacks with ashes on their head and screaming to God. And what happened? The miracle of Purim. Then it happened in Hanukkah, but there was a minority, just a group of people, the Maccabim. But they did it so good that it saves the entire nation. And now it's going to happen again. And that's the purpose. God is preparing the world to all these fantastic, amazing prophecies. They're very scary, some of them. But I want to finish this part of the lecture just with one thing for us to know. Every bad prophecy in the Bible, in the Tanakh, doesn't have to go through. It's only pending. It depends on the reaction of the Jews and the rest of the world. If the people are going to make full repentance, 100%, then everything will be canceled. If they rebel against God, they do not want to make repentance, no tshuva, then only God can save us. What can happen? Even the non-Jews have to make repentance. The Americans, the Europeans, their lifestyle. It's very not modest. Sex crimes, every second, millions of sex crimes the non-Jews are doing all over the world. Millions, every second. Everywhere in the world. Unbelievable. And this is sex crimes that even the non-Jews are not allowed to do. Stealing to a non-Jew, it's even worse punishment than to a Jew, according to the 7 laws of Noah. And they don't know it. And there's a lot of stealing, white-collar crimes everywhere. In the United States, 1 out of 100 people sitting in jail. Did you know that? 1% of the population sitting in jail, close to 3 million people in jails. And this is only the people who got caught. You know that for everyone who gets caught, there's 100 that doesn't. And this is the situation. Take the sins of the Jews, add them together, and that's called Igdishu Taseah. It got all the way up to here. I hope I'm wrong. I wish. I really like pray for it every day. But it's so clear that God is fed up with the behaving of the people. And who knows what's going to be next. Now remember, each one of the people who sits here, you, your children, your parents, your friends, every one of us is responsible for himself. Your parents won't save you. Your children can help a little bit, but it's 100% in your hand. A person can save himself. We have a sentence in Tehillim. It's an amazing sentence if you understand what it means. It says, Pnei Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is aiming his view into the wicked people to destroy them from the face of the earth. Tzaku, but when they begin to scream, Hashem Shamea, God is listening, Umikol Tzarotam Yatzilam, will save them from all their problems. What a turnaround. Just a second ago, there was a complete signed verdict against this person pending from Rosh Hashanah when it's going to take place. They begin to scream something here, screaming to Hashem, you're the only one who will save us. Please, we're not going to rely on the army anymore, on the government, on the wealthy people. 2-3 years ago, when girls wanted to get married and they brought them guys from the yeshiva, they're not wealthy. They have a lot of Torah, but they don't have a lot of money, most of them. Some of them used to say, I really like the guy, he's a fantastic tzaddik, but I'm worried about my financial future. How is he going to support me? How are we going to pay mortgage, rent, cars, children? That's a lot of expenses. Therefore, I'm not going to take it. I want a businessman, a guy that works. He can support me better. Today, all the rich people, the millionaires, the billionaires, go and see what's happening in New York. The rabbis that come from Israel, they knock on doors. They used to get thousands, tens of thousands, sometimes millions. They get now $5, $2, $10, $18, $100. This is the donations right now. The wealthy people that used to give tons of money, they cut most of their charity. Why? Even they are worried about tomorrow, which is a big mistake to cut. Now it's the time to give even more, to show God that you trust Him. But that's another topic. I would like to start everything I'm speaking about. Wow, I have a problem myself seeing what I'm speaking about. The setup here is a little bit complicated. The Torah, as I told you, the Torah said that a person is a combination of three things. Maybe if you just give me the laptop, I'll do it without the screen because it's hard for me to see. So just bring it over. I'm sorry about that. Anyway, it's in Hebrew, so I will translate everything to English. You won't be missing anything. Yeah, just unplug it. The Torah said there are three partners in the creation of the human being. His father, his mother, and the creator of the world. As I mentioned before, the Torah say you should not... Thank you. You should not... I'll manage. This will be enough. You should not call the deceased people and communicate them with them in any way. What now? A person that communicates with the deceased people is basically risking his life. Taking a big risk that Chas v'Shalom, his life should be shortened. Why? We see that in the time of King Saul and the prophet Samuel, we had a serious problem. What's the problem was? The Jews were facing a war against a very cruel nation called Amalek. King Saul was very, very nervous. He was worried what's going to happen in a war. And he went to a woman, tried to communicate with the prophet Samuel. The prophet Samuel was already dead at that time. After he brought his spirit, the word of the prophet Samuel was like this: "Why did you disturb me to bring me back here?" And he told him, "I'm very worried about tomorrow, what's going to happen in the war." So he told him like this: "Tomorrow you and your children here with me," which means you're all going to die. There's good news here and a bad news. What's the good news? The good news is that we wish in our best dream that we'll be able to be in the world to come with someone like Prophet Samuel, which is one of the greatest Jews ever lived. At the same time, what happened the next day, they all died. The prophet, the king Saul, and his children died in a war. And that's what happened. The woman that communicated with the prophet, she didn't know that it's King Saul. Why? King Saul himself warned the people not to call the dead people. But he put a custom. And he went there and he fooled her. And only through the conversation, she's a medium, she was communicating between both of them, she realized who's the person sitting next to her, and she got very nervous, and he told her, "Don't worry, I won't punish you for that." And this is one of the sources inside the Torah. In another place, in the beginning of the Torah, right in the beginning, how the Torah starts, Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim v'et haaretz, God created heaven and earth, and then there's a list of everything that was created in the 6 days of the creation. The last thing that was created, one of the last things in the creation on Friday, on the sixth day, was the human being. And this is how the Torah says, "Va'yitzer Hashem Elokim et Adam afar min ha'adama, va'yipach be'apav nishmat chayim, va'yi Adam lenefesh chaya." Translation: and God created the human being, sand from the ground, and he blew a living soul, a spirit, into his nostrils. And the next step was that the person became alive. which means there was first the body, but the body couldn't move an inch until the divine spiritual soul enters the body. The body was helpless, laying down. Once the soul entered the nostrils, the person opened up his eyes, started to talk, started to walk, his intelligence started to work, and this is the prophecy of the creation of mankind. Then in the King Solomon, in the book of Qohelet, there is a description of a reverse transaction, what we call death. How a person died. Vayashuv ha'afar. Vayashuv aguf el ha'afar. And the body will return to the ground. Ki mimenu lukach. Because that's where it came from. Ve'aneshama tashuv lebe'aleah ki hu netana. And the soul will return to the master, because he is the one who put it inside the body. So two transactions, creation, life, and death. The sand the body goes back into the sand, and eventually there's no more bodies. However, there is another thing we should understand. Since we are a combination of body and soul, the soul transfer throughout the years, from the time it was created until these days, the world according to Judaism is 5,769 years old. 5,769 years old from the birthday of Adam until today. If you have doubts, by the way, about the age of the world, and you may think that the world is millions of years old, or billions of years old, I don't want to waste time on it now. I have a whole 4-hour lectures about it. But I urge you, when you enter my website, I put two non-Jewish movies from American scientists from the South, top scientists in the world, that proving according to objective science that the world that we live in is only a few thousand years old. And that's without Torah. Without the Torah, the Torah says clearly the age of the world. But they're proving that everything that the other scientists are saying, it's all based on speculations, and actually he can prove that these speculations is basically baloney. Now, 5,769 years. Since then until today, almost each one of us were here many, many times before, in different bodies. Sometimes we've been here in a female body, sometimes in a male body, sometimes as a poor person, sometimes as a wealthy person, sometimes as a handicap, and many, many other versions of human being, different kinds of people. We were travel from one body to another according to the test that the Creator is setting for us in the time when He decides which soul will enter the body that is being created between a husband and wife. There is a bank in heaven that all the people who are waiting for a second chance, for another chance to come here, is choosing carefully which one of all the dead people will be reincarnated to these parents. It's not a coincidence. There is a reason why some of us are very handsome. There is a reason why some of us are not good looking. Nothing is coincidence. It's according to the test. There is reason why some of us are very healthy and some of us almost every day are sick, and many, many other examples. But of course, the most important thing that we should know, that it's clear in the Torah and in the Oral Torah, that everything, every person here is being reincarnated until he's going to be able to finish his correction. His soul will be pure again as he was in the beginning, and then he doesn't have to visit here anymore. Why? To visit here, it's not a reward. That means you have to start again your test completely from the beginning. So the Torah says, let's see what parts of our body was given by our fathers and what parts was given by the mothers. Three partners in the creation of human being. His father, he is creating for him his bones, ligaments, nails, the brain, the white inside the eyes, around the pupils. The mother gives the color of the skin, the flesh, the skin, the air, the pupils. And God gives the spirit, the soul, the image of the face, the ability to see, the ability to hear, the ability to talk and to walk, the wisdom and the intelligence. This is all from the Oral Torah, Masechet Nida, page 31. It was written approximately 2,000 years ago, but it was given to the Jews as an integral part of the Torah 3,320 years ago. And the Torah says, once the time for the person arrived to die, comes God and take his share and leave what his father and mother contributed, and obviously is helpless. He cannot move. He cannot talk. He cannot see. So obviously, when a person is dead, he's unable to hear, or to see, or to talk, or to walk. Why? Came God and took his share and left him just like this with what his father and mother gave him. The Torah says in Sefer Dvarim, Yudchet, Lo yimatze becha shoel o veidoni vedoresh el hametim. Be very careful. There are three different ways to communicate with the dead people. It's three sins from the Torah, from the 613. The prophet Yeshaya, chapter 2, he says, from the human being, asher neshama be'apo, a person that have a living soul inside his nostrils. The soul is inside the brain. The soul, it's not a physical thing. It's an energy. It's a holy, divine energy. The Oral Torah told us that man de nafach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that blew it in, blew it from his own image, spiritual image, which means every one of us has a spark from the creator of the world himself. And that's why eventually this spark, this energy, what we call soul, neshama, will return back to the master, because it was put by him. Then the Torah continues, and the Torah says, when a baby is created in his mother's womb for 9 months, there's an angel that comes and teaches him the entire Torah. Once the time for him comes to be born, comes the angel and hit him on his mouth, right here on the top lip, and makes him some kind of magic. Makes him forget his entire Torah. Why? Because the purpose of the creation is not to be born a special genius rabbi. Then you have nothing to do here. You have to gain it with hard effort. It's a part of your test. And that's why you're going to get score points for it. The more you did, the more efforts, the more reward. So this baby has a spiritual ability that he doesn't have after he's born. Once he's inside, he's aware of what's happening outside. I'll give you an example of what I mean. The scientists are proving today that when the women listening to classical music, intelligent music, in the time of their pregnancy, or women that listen to, excuse my language, garbage music, it's affecting the intelligence of the baby when he's born. They did surveys, they test. When they play this music, and they play this, and they check thousands of cases, and they see big difference. But there's something much more interesting than music. Today, since Israel started as a nation, they made in Israel close to 2 million abortions. Close to 2 million abortions in Israel. In America, it's much, much worse, and the rest of the world. But most abortions are being done in the first 3 months. Some even later, in private clinics. But most of the experiments that the scientists did in a baby in the first 3 months of the pregnancy, they were shocked to find few things. For instance, when they injected sugar into the womb, the baby drank double of the amount. That means he's tasting the sweetness of the liquid. Very interesting. Then they injected a needle, a pointy stick inside the womb, and they pinched the baby on his nose. The first time the baby, and this is third month of the pregnancy, is approximately 90 days old. After they pinched him in his nose, he turned his head to the left. They repeated four times. Every time they pinched him, he was moving his head. What do we see here? That his nerve system is perfectly working. It's a human being. Yes, his nerve system is working. It's a very sophisticated system. The fifth time, when they were about to pinch the baby, he moved his face before the needle touched his nose, which means his intelligence, he was understanding danger is on the way based on the last few times, much like a computer. And he moved his head to the left to try to protect his nose from that little pain. And many, many other examples. Most women, when they do this abortion, they are not aware of it. They made an experiment in Israel. Moment before they started it, they took special microphone and put it on the stomach, and they began to hear pulse in the speakers. And the women were asking, what's this? They said, that's the pulse of your baby. What do you mean, baby? I thought there's nothing yet. 50% of them got up from the bed and canceled the entire process and all the committee that they went through and the papers that they signed. They ripped it off. They did not agree. We would have another million Jews if they would give a fair chance to every woman to hear what she's about to do. We would have at least another million Jews. Multiplied by 60 years, probably would have another 20 million intelligent Jews in the world. How many Jews we are in the world today? 13.2 million Jews all over the world. Even though we started in the same generation like the Chinese 4,200 years ago, they are close to 2 billion, and we are 13.2 million Jews. We continue. Five different things we're going to speak when it comes to life after life. First, clinical death, which we call out-of-body experience. Second, seance, communication with the dead people through a broker, through a middleman. Third, reincarnations. Fourth, hypnotizing people, it's called regression. Regress them into the past and take important information from their past and sometimes from their previous lives in different languages. It's very interesting. You don't want to miss it. And then the fifth one, I never get to it, unfortunately, because the lecture will become too long. The fifth one called Dibukim, an unexpected visitor in the same body, which means each one of us has one soul in the body, but there is a possibility that once in a blue moon, an extra soul is entering a body of a live person, and that creates a conflict. Two captains trying to drive, to fly the same plane to two different directions. When one takes control on the stick of the plane goes south. When the other one takes control, it turns to the other side. And that's called Dibukim. What does it mean, according to science, a complete death? According to science, we need no heartbeat, no brain waves, no oxygen goes into the brains, into the cells of the brains. Later, a drop in the temperature, and in the end, no more feelings. The person does not feel anything. You burn him with a cigarette, you pinch him, you hit him, no response. Five symptoms, everyone agrees that if a person has all five, for sure he's dead. There's big arguments in the world between doctors and other doctors and politicians and judges and rabbis and priests. Everybody arguing what dead is. When the brain stops to work or when the heart stops to work or when the person is unable to breathe. In the old days, it was very simple to understand who is dead and who is alive. Why? Once a person stops to breathe, is considered dead. That's it. However, today, with all the equipment that they have in hospitals, they are able to supply air, oxygen to the person for weeks and sometimes for years and keep him alive with pulse and brain waves. And therefore, they're getting very confused because the Torah says, "Min ha'adam asher neshama be'apo," a person that is able to breathe. Once he's not able to breathe, he's dead. But today, it's not the case anymore. With all the artificial equipment, it's confusing the scientific world. But with these five symptoms, there's no argument. Once a person has all five, for sure he's dead. I'm going to bring sources from the scientific parapsychologist, Dr. Raymond Moody. Is a very, very famous psychiatry doctor in Virginia University that interviewed 150 people that died and came back to life. He wrote many books and articles, very famous. Carlos Ossis, a psychologist, interviewed 877 doctors. Each one of these names, I want to skip some because I don't have that much time, but each one of these names is top in the world in what he does. The best on all of them is Dr. Elizabeth Kovler-Ross. She is from Detroit, a psychiatrist, world-known psychiatrist. 20 years of her life, she invested in checking death and what comes after. She wrote books and articles, and we're going to see what's the conclusion of the research that all these non-Jewish scientists and parapsychologists are doing. According to surveys in the United States, more than 30 million people died and came back to life. Now you should know, the five symptoms that I mentioned before, if a person doesn't have it for 5 minutes, no brain waves, no breath, no heartbeat, and the body of the temperature drops and no more feelings, 5 minutes, according to science, to medicine, he is considered a dead person and has no chance for him to come back to life. But every rule has an exception to the rule. And the interesting part is that today we have so many exceptions to these rules that we cannot call it a rule anymore. If we have 30 million people in the world that reported that their soul came out of their body and came back into their body, this is only the people who reported. Most people don't even bother to report. It happens to them in their bed, in their house, in their cars, in the street sometimes. And then when they wake up, that's it. They go back to their normal life. 30 million. In the United States alone, more than 8 million Americans died and came back to life. Now, let's see some of the mutual elements that these people are describing when they come back to life. The soul is flying above the body. The soul enters a dark tunnel. A dark tunnel. While they're exiting the body, they're entering a long dark tunnel. In the beginning, it's very dark. Later, it becomes huge light. And they see a spiritual light that they all agree that they never saw such a thing in this world ever before. Then they say that they communicated with that light through telepathy, which means there's no really words. You want to say what you want to say, and it comes out as thoughts, and the light communicates with you in different way. But everything is very clear. Then they report that they saw people, relatives, and friends that died are coming to visit them, to welcome them. Then they report that they saw their entire life in fast pictures, in chronological order, one after the other, which means if he's 60 years old, in the time of his death, which was 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, depend. In those few minutes, each one of them described that they saw their entire life, the last 40, 50, 60 years, from the minute they crawl on a rug as babies until this moment of the accident, they saw everything, one picture after the other. Then, all of them, with no exception, were able to still be connected to this world. They hear what happened around their body. They see the doctors, they see the ambulance, they see parts of their body all over the highway. Some of them reported that they wanted to pick up the phone and dial 911 to save their body, to save themselves, but obviously there's no more material. It's only an energy, a divine spiritual energy. There's no material. Material can pick up material. Spiritual is a different thing. It's like radio waves, to just give you an understanding. So they said, I was really trying to pick up the phone and dial 911, but I couldn't save myself, and I didn't want to die, but there's nothing I could do about it. Here is some of the things they had to say. One woman, this is the way she described. I was up there, flying above my body. I saw how they work on my body, the doctors. I saw they connected the electric shocks to my chest. I saw my body is jumping from the electric, and then I felt I'm falling heavily back into my body, and I opened my eyes, and I'm back in conscious. But at the time that the doctors were convinced that she's dead, she was actually flying above their head and seeing what they do to her body. And then, without controlling it, she was vacuumed back into the nostrils, into the body, and opened up her eyes, and all of a sudden she's back to life. I knew I'm dying, but there was nothing I can do about it. Nobody heard me. I came out of my body without a doubt. I saw my body in a surgery table. I heard the doctor giving up on my life. I felt horrible. I didn't want to die. Another person. I was out of my body. I knew clearly I can either stay there and there is still a chance to return. Much better. All the deceased people described that cave, that tunnel. In the beginning, it was very dark. They saw mutual circles, and the soul was flying like a missile. In the middle of those circles, they are flying, and slowly, slowly, it becomes lighter and lighter. And there is a huge noise, huge ring of some kind of a siren, that while they're flying, they hear this noise. One of them described it, if you put together all the stereo system together, it will not create such a noise. I felt I'm flying in a dark valley. The darkness was complete. I could not see a thing, but I felt a spiritual adventure. I felt silence and peace, no fear. Flying inside those circles. I was out of my body. In the beginning, I felt bad. Then came that huge light. And I was still able to see everything around me. The nurses, the doctors, the entire hospital. The interesting part is that every one of you agree that God forbid if a person will die here, or if a person goes to sleep here on the floor, and when you're waking him up from his sleeping, you ask him, excuse me, can you describe to me what happened on the roof of this building? And you say, what makes you think that I'm able to tell you what's happening in different floors of this building? The deceased people, when they came back to life, they described every room that you wanted in a hospital. You ask them, what happened in room 712? They tell you what happened over there, how the room looks, what shoes the person put by the window, and not only that, they're describing the way the shoe looked from the outside of the hospital, which means there was no way to see it. You can only see it if you come and fly out of the building and come and put your face by the window and you see from the outside of the room, then you can describe it. But from inside the room, it's a different angle. You couldn't see it. Unbelievable. They describe which doctor signed on death certificate in what room in the hospital. They even describe what's above the ceiling, which means if it would happen now when he comes back to life, he will tell you the color of the wires and how many wires above this chandelier. It leaves no doubt. You can dream until tomorrow. You won't know details what happened inside this chandelier. There's no way to know. This is a scientific evidence that these people really came out of their body. This light had such a fantastic personality. Gray, warm, good. I didn't want to leave it. Some people describe that they felt there's a line, that you know that once you cross that line, it's obvious there is no more return. And as long as you did not cross that line, there's still a chance to go reverse. The light asked me, "Are you ready to die?" I felt like I'm speaking to a person, but it wasn't a person, it was the light. I knew that the light already know everything about me. He knows I'm not ready to die. I felt that I'm being tested. I felt confidence and love that I never felt in this life. Hard to describe. Then they described that they saw their relatives, grandparents, parents, brothers, sisters, friends from school, neighbors. They already died, some of them 10, 20, 30 years ago. All of a sudden, a person sees relatives coming after they're not here for many, many years. They came to me, like to show me the way. They look exactly like they look in this life, the same image. I saw that they're all flying around us, around me. I saw my friend in my brain, in my intelligence, but not with his physical body, spiritual image, but clear, the fingers, the hands, the legs, everything perfect 100%. Now, because of the limitations that we had with the screen, I didn't know this place, and it's very hard to come stand here and look all the way up. I'm close to the end of the lecture. I have few films of non-Jewish Americans that were interviewed in American live television that died, and they show the car crash, they show how the body looked after the accident, and these people were able to come back to life, and they are being interviewed on Fox News, and very interesting clips. I have 3 clips here. Then I have a video of a kid, soon we're going to go into reincarnation, a baby that when he was 1.5 years old, non-Jew, American kid, his father was changing his diaper, and the baby, remember, younger than 2 years old, told his father, "Dad, it's interesting. When I was your age, I used to change your diapers." That's what he told him. Obviously, it means that before he was reincarnated in this body of the baby, he was his father that died. The father was reincarnated as the son. So that means you are the children of your parents. It could be very well that you are actually used to be their parents in a previous life, and now you are being reincarnated, as the Ari HaKadosh writes in the Kabbalah 500 years ago, that it's very common that children are actually the parents or grandparents sometimes being reincarnated, measure for measure. Make sure you don't give hard time to your parents. One day your parents may become your children. And believe me, it's not going to be easy. All right, so that's a fantastic clip. It's non-Jews, nothing to do with Torah. It's goyim, scientifically, I think 2 or 3 years they investigated that case. And while this baby was growing, they bought him an album. You're going to see this clip. You don't want to miss it. It's shocking. Mamash, you feel goosebumps when you see it. Let's move on. I'm going to skip, as I say, this video, and we'll show it in the end. All of them describe the movie of their life in snaps, picture, chronological order, like Photoshop, one after the other, boom, 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 one in the right order, very fast. Now we have to ask a question. If a person was dead for 5 minutes, 7 minutes, when he came back to life, he saw perhaps millions of pictures. From the time he was baby until today, it's a lot of pictures. How is it possible that he was able to see so many pictures in 6 minutes? The answer is the same like in a dream. I'm sure you had a dream that you dreamed that you were 6 months in the ocean, or you were in jail for 10 years, or you had a fight, a war for a few months, or you've been walking in the desert for months. You know, it's a very long dream. And when you woke up, your wife just told you, "Hey, you're only sleeping 10 minutes. How are you telling me a story of 6 months? How 6 months fit in a 2 or 3 minutes dream? Just that you know, the scientists are arguing how long is the longest dream. Some say only 9 seconds. Some say 3 minutes. Everyone agrees that it's a matter of seconds or minutes, not hours. In that case, we all know that sometimes a person cries in his dream for half an hour, crying, moving in his bed, getting nervous, sweating, heartbeat, if you check it, in the middle of his dream, he's somewhere. Then when he wakes up, he describes a 6-month torture. The answer is, the soul really receives 6-month torture. It has nothing to do with the physical time. Time exists only where material exists. If there is no material, you lose the aspect of time. It's hard to measure time. If the soul separates from the body, the soul can feel millions of years of good or bad in less than a minute. There's no limitation of time. Remember, time exists only when material exists. When the soul separates from the body and go out, there's no more time for it. It's simulation. You can feel whatever God wants you to feel. If He wants you to feel 1 month, you feel 1 month. If He wants you to feel a billion years, you feel exactly a billion years. And then when you open up your eyes, you see you're actually sleeping only 10 minutes. Doesn't matter. The torture was real. The torture was real. You don't really need to have your body there to feel the pain. Obviously, people are crying. Some people get heart attacks. When they wake up from the dream, they get heart attack from the excitement. Chazal already told us that the person is not where his feet standing, where his mind is. You can be right here watching me and you worry about your stocks for tomorrow morning. Where are you right now? In Wall Street, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. That's where you are. Waiting with excitement, what's going to be tomorrow? Another crash or maybe a miracle will happen? Some people, their minds is in Vietnam every day of their life. They still have horror nightmares from there. They hear gunshots. They cannot communicate with anyone. Why? They're there. The body is here. But they're really there. A person can sit on a beach, pastorali, mamash, beautiful view. You put headphones with screaming and shooting and bombs and people are crying. And Jen check his pulse, check his blood pressure, and you see that another minute this person will die. But why? He's in a beach with beautiful weather. The birds are flying, the trees, great noise of the view of the waves. He's not there. His body is there, but he is in a real torture, in a combat, and obviously. So now, let's see one of the goyim, what he has to say, a non-Jew. I felt major disappointment, very embarrassed. I saw my entire life. They show me what I did wrong. I thought to myself, I wish I wouldn't do that. I wish I can go back and correct it. I felt I did not achieve anything. I did not know anything. I did not complete anything in my life. This is a non-Jew that is not obligated to live according to the laws of God, to the Torah. You only have 7 laws to keep. That's it. And 5 or 6 of them, it's mandatory. They do it anyway. So their test is very limited. But still, this non-Jew was horrified from the results of his life up to that day. We have to think what's going to be with us, because we have a much major obligation, much greater. So now, Dr. Elizabeth Kobler-Ross, she say it's interesting. People that parts of their body were cut, they don't have an arm. When they died and came back to life, they saw themselves with that arm, the spiritual arm. Not the physical arm. The soul has the same image like the body and it will always remain complete. But it's interesting. If you ever see a person without a hand, try to imagine that he really has a hand. It's a spiritual hand, but you cannot feel it. You cannot touch it. But it's a part of his soul. It comes out of the arm. It's interesting. It gets even better. Blind people that became blind when they were young, the last they saw colors was 30, 40 years ago. When they died and returned to life, they described the 5 or 10 minutes that they were dead, all in colors. They know that the nurse is blonde. They know that the hair of the doctor is gray and he has gold glasses. They know the color of the closets. They know the floor. They know the chandelier. They describe the entire hospital from inside, from outside, all in colors. They know jewelry, diamonds, rings, everything. How? They're blind. It's a blind person. It gets even better. People who were born blind, they never saw colors in their life. I want to ask you a question. If we take a kid now, 10 years old, he was born, lo aleinu, blind. And we will try to explain him how blue looks, or green, or yellow. Is it possible? Can you explain a blind person what blue looks like? You see it for a million years, he won't get an idea what blue is. He doesn't have it in his computer. It's like typing into the computer Hebrew. Computer doesn't know what it is. You type a million times, it won't work. The computer doesn't recognize it. The computer of that person doesn't know what blue is. Only in this life, in this reincarnation. But in his previous life, his soul knows colors. So it gets very interesting. When a person died, some blind person, she writes, remember 20 years she was working on that from morning to evening with people that died and came back to life. And she's the number one in the world, number one parapsychologist. Remember, Dr. Elizabeth Kovler-Ross from Detroit. She said people who are born blind describe things in colors when they die. How they recognize color? They never learned about colors in this life. They don't know what blue is. When the soul gets out of the body, all the limitations of that soul disappear. What is it like? If I am the soul and this room is the body, right now I'm the soul inside the body. I'm limited. I cannot come out. I am inside. But I have two windows. The two windows are facing the eastern side of the building. I can only see to that side because that's where my eyes are, my windows. If I want to look to the western side or to the southern side, I can't. It's blocked. That's the back of my head. That's this side of the face. I cannot see. But if I'm coming out of the building completely, no more limitation. I can see to all directions. Therefore, when the soul comes out of the body, the test that God set for this blind person doesn't exist. It exists only when it's connected to his physical image, which is the body, the envelope. I'm skipping the part that they're all describing that they started to cry after they came back to life. They were all shaking and they're describing what happened. We don't have time for that. And this is the final conclusion. The final conclusion, I know without any doubt, life continues after the physical death of the body. Those who are open-minded and willing to listen will benefit. And those who block their ears will be very surprised. There is no doubt. There is life after death. Dr. Kenneth Ring, Dr. Raymond Moody, there's a list of about 30 world-known psychiatrists and psychologists. Obviously, now let's see what Judaism had to tell us. Everything I just told you was in the name of science, in the name of medicine, in the name of psychology. Let's see what the Torah had to tell us about this 3,000 years ago. Rav Yosef, the son of Rabbi Yehoshua, was sick and died. Then he came back to life. His father told him when he returned to life, what did you see in the world up there? He told him, everything is the opposite of this world. Those who are important here are nothing over there. And those who no one cares about here in this life, they are very important over there, which means the righteous people that live humble with poverty, going to yeshiva, learn Torah, praying, reading Tehillim, nobody in this life pay attention to them. Primitive. We don't want to be like them. It's old-fashioned. They are very important over there. And those fancy people here that everybody jealous with, they are the last ones over there. Everything is the opposite, the boy was telling him. The father told him, no, over there is the world of truth. Here it's all an illusion. And then the boy said one more thing. But I heard an echo over there. Ashrei mi sheba lekan v'talmudo beyado. How lucky is the Jew that comes here with knowledge in my Torah in his hands. An echo, an announcement. This is one source. Another source in the Zohar, the Zohar says Rav Krospadai died and then opened up his eyes and started to describe that his soul were elevated to the upper world and described his entire trial. We don't need to go 2,000 years back to the time of the Zohar. There is a person in Israel called Avi Khajani. Memorize this name. An ex-gangster, criminal, from Pardes Katz, not far from Bnei Brak, Ramat Gan, that area. There's a bad neighborhood that he grew up there. And he got stabbed in his heart, opened up his heart to two pieces almost. Big kitchen knife. They stabbed him, they waited for him in the hallway to the building in the middle of a dark hour. He stabbed him and ran away. His parents took him to the hospital. Later, after 45 minutes, when he came back to life, he described the entire route that his parents, his father and his brother, took him to Belinson in Petah Tikva, if you know Israel. It's about 20 minutes ride. With sidewalk they went on. They went to opposite direction, red lights. He described everything. And he made a tape describing his entire trial. The most interesting things in his trial is, now if you're Israeli or you know Israel, you know that somebody in Israel, that his name is Abraham, nobody ever will call him Abraham. Abraham does not exist in Israel, only in the Torah, in kindergarten or in school, in first grade. In Israel, you either Avi, or if they try to be correct, Avram. No Abraham, Avram. Avi, Avram, Avrum, Abi, whatever. He said the first thing in his trial, this is what he heard. Abraham, Ham, a huge echo. Ham, it goes on and on. He doesn't understand what's going on. Then again, Abraham, Ham, Ham, like this. Why you change your name to Avi? Why you shorten this blessed name to such a name? That's what he says. He said, no one ever called me Abraham. That's why I know it's real. Abraham, such a loud voice. And then he described his entire trial, and he got lucky to come back to life. The story with this guy, believe it or not, that then he became partially religious, and 3 months later he went back to his evil ways. And then he died again. He fell from a second floor in a construction building on his stomach, on a pile of sand, on his stomach, and died again. And he had another trial. You promised and you didn't keep your promise. What saved him, eventually, I think, if I remember correct, I heard it more than 10 years ago, he had a very, very important grandfather, big tzaddik, that was begging to give him another chance. We don't understand about this, why one person will get a chance and 99.9% of the people don't get a chance. But one thing is, it's very recommended for those who understand Hebrew to hear his tape. You'll get an idea what's going to happen after life. Then, the Torah continue. This is again from the Zohar, from Kabbalah. When the soul exits this world, it goes into the cave of Me'arat HaMachpelah. Where is Me'arat HaMachpelah? Where Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are buried. Which is the route into heaven. 3 days after the death, the soul is flying above the body and have hopes to return into that body. That's Talmud Yerushalmi, the Yerushalmi Talmud, 2,000 years ago. All 3 days, this is the Gemara Masechet Yevamot, the Babylonian Talmud, the Oral Torah, page Pei Tet Zayin. No, actually, it's the Yerushalmi. Excuse me, the Yevamot in Yerushalmi. And this is what it says. 3 days after the death, the soul is flying above the body. All 7 days after the death, 7 days. Now you understand where the Shiva comes from, to see Shiva. 7 days, the soul goes back and forth from the house into the grave, back and forth. Now remember, the soul has no limitation. It can fly to, from America to Jerusalem in less than a second. You don't need a special Concorde, first class to fly. Air France, you don't need, it's a soul. It's an energy in seconds. It goes from one place to another, back and forth. The dead people hear everything that happens in their funeral. Everything. They hear who's screaming, they see who's really care, they see who showed up, they see who is happy counting the money from the wheel, they see everything. They see who really bothered to show up to sit Shiva and who say, ah, I cannot, my business, I have problems, I'm gonna sit here in America. They see everything. Not only that, they see and hear almost everything until the body is covered completely with sand. But even when the body is covered with sand, they still have some abilities to see and hear things from this world until the worms completing and eating the body completely. Only after there's no more skin, no more flesh on the body, that's when the soul separates completely from this world forever until, unless it's going to be reincarnated again in a different body. But this body finishes turn. Then the Torah continues, and this is the Zohar. Rabbi Dosa says, the Torah in Sefer Shmot says, Ki lo irani ha'adam v'chai. God announced in the Torah in Sefer Shmot, Exodus 33, a person will not be able to see me and survive and to stay alive. It's impossible. In their life, they cannot see me. But all of them, with no exception, will see me in the time of their death. Sheneemar, it said, Lefanav ichreu kol yor de afar. In front of God, everyone will bow down on his knees in the time of his death. Then the Zohar continues. Nothing is harder for the soul than the separation from the body. And a person doesn't die until he sees the light of God. Remember, this is 2,000 years ago, before all these researches that I read to you before. This is in this generation. This was written already 2,000 years ago. Out of his desire to this light, he separates from his body. When a time comes for a person to leave this world, he sees the Spirit of God. If he's righteous, he will have the merit to stick to this light. And if not, I don't want to continue. In a time of death, a person gets permission to see everything he couldn't see in his life. Why did you miss the plane? Why your partner stole your money? Why the divorce? Why you never got married? Why you never had children? Why, God forbid, he died? Why you have, I'm sure, billions of whys that you don't know really why it happened. It's not our purpose to know. But we know only what we need to know. What we don't need to know, we don't know. But then you will understand everything. The world to come is wide. No borders, no walls, no ceiling. Huge light that will not be anything like the lights in this world. This is, remember, this is ancient books. Each one of the sources that I read to you is at least 2,000 years old and more. At a time when a righteous person dies, God ordered all the righteous people who already died, go and welcome this righteous person. And they all come and say to him, Yavo Shalom, come in peace. That's Gemara in Masechet Ketubot, page 104. In the times when a person died, he gets permission to see his relatives from this life that already passed away. Remember what they all described, that they saw their relatives? It's in the Gemara. And he see them and recognize them. And they look in the same image that they had in this life. If he's has the merit, if he's righteous, they are very happy to him. They're smiling, they're happy, they come towards him. If not, slowly, slowly they're disappearing, and he stays there mourning for his death. The Gemara says, Brachot, page 28, when Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, the president of Israel, in the time of the destruction of the Second Temple, when the Romans occupied Israel 2,000 years ago, moment before he closed his eyes and died, moments before, he told his student, run and get a chair from King Chizkiyahu, the king of Judah. He is coming to welcome me. Run, get him his chair. He was a king, the greatest king we ever had in the history of the Jewish people. King Chizkiyahu, the greatest. So, it's interesting because it's in the Gemara. The Gemara says that two of the Rabbanim, they were used to learn in the yeshiva, and one was sick and was about to die, and he told his chevruta, do me a favor. When I die, make sure you make me a respectable eulogy here in this yeshiva. That's where I learned all my life. Because I'm gonna stand above you and hear everything you say. It's in the Talmud. How did they know? If it's not divine information, well, people were able to know about these things. No communication, no parapsychology, none of these things we have today. They don't have the equipment that we have today, and so forth and so on. The Torah says, when a person died, he begins to see everything he did in his life. And then when his trial begins, he is asked, you confirming that this is what you did, and that date, and this is the sin that you did in that particular day, and in this day. And he says, hen vahen, sure, because over there you cannot lie. Over here, it's a different story. Over there, it's the world of the truth. When a time for a person come to die, God comes to him and say, I want you to sign and confirm that everything I showed you, you really did. And nobody has a choice. It's true. He has to sign. And this is in Yalkut Shimoni, Parashat Iyov. Da, ma lemala mimcha. What's above you? Always you should be aware. What's above you? Ayin ro'a, there's an eye who watch over you all the time. And there's an ear who listens to you all the time. And everything you are doing is being registered in the book of God. This is a sentence in the Torah. Cannot avoid it. Then, everything you say in front of the dead, he knows until the flesh, the skin, is being eaten completely. Amar Rav l'Rav Shmuel, this is what I just said before, B'sha'at mitati, make me a eulogy, I'm going to be above you and listen. This is in Masechet Shabbat, page 153. Now, the second step here, it's called medium. There are people in the world that can go into trance and communicate between us to the deceased people that we want to communicate with. It's completely forbidden in the Torah for a Jew to speak to dead people. Obviously, it's possible because the Torah wouldn't waste three commandments if it wouldn't be possible. But the Torah says a Jew is not allowed to do it. Everything I'm showing you right now, non-Jews did, and we learn from their experiments. There is a famous medium called Eileen Gart, and the other one, Lenora Pfeiffer. They have special spiritual ability that when you ask them to communicate with a dead person, they are able to tell you everything this person wants you to know. They've been tested for 30 years with all kinds of committees and detectives. And everything was checked to make sure that they're authentic and they're not making up things. They give unbelievable information. And the final conclusion was that they know things that only the person and his deceased relative are known. Nobody else knows. And she was able to tell everything. There is another way to communicate with a dead person. It's called automatic writing. a person is half fainted. This is the medium. He's holding a pen, not regularly like we hold a pen when we write. No. They're holding a pen very loose, like this. And they are asleep in a way. And then after a few minutes, the pen begins to move. And the pen writing. And there's a message that the dead person writes to the person who wants to speak with him. Let me show you one of these famous automatic writing that happened. In the middle of the seance, the American medium Rosemary Brown, that has no knowledge, no formal knowledge in music, in the middle of the seance, she started to write famous, complicated music of the most genius musicians, such as Bach and Beethoven, Chopin, and very, very famous classical songwriters, music writers. Even though she doesn't know anything about music, Emma Conti, an Italian girl, receiving songs from Emily Dickinson. She won 46 awards for the songs that she wrote, even though she's a complete ignorant. She didn't even go to school. You hear me? There's a girl, Italian girl, she writes music. Every competition that she goes, she wins, always. And she doesn't even know to write. She never went to school. Primitive, this is more than 100 years ago. Who gives her the music? A woman, very famous musician called Emily Dickinson. She writes the song for him, and she wins the award. In the middle of a trance, Eileen Gartz, October 5, 1930. She begins to describe what happened. There was a spaceship, like an airplane. The British Air Force, after taking off, crashed, and most of the people died. That night, Eileen Gartz was about to communicate with the spirit of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, which is the author of Sherlock Holmes, the famous book Sherlock Holmes. But instead of the voice of Sherlock Holmes, from her mouth, she started to speak with the voice of a man. Remember, this is a woman sleeping, and from her mouth, a man is speaking with a different accent and a different voice. He is moving her throat and her tongue, and she is speaking with the spirit of another person. And in the middle of speaking, he begins to say, "The engine was too heavy. The hose exploded and all the oil spread all over. The angle of the flight was too narrow. The cover absorbed too much water and made it even harder to take off. They added another room into that plane in the middle that makes it even worse. It couldn't take off until we fell and crashed. After a complete investigation, they found that everything the captain, he died, everything he said in the middle of the seance, perfect, 100%. That's the reason for the crash." She was about to speak with one individual, and another spirit came and gave her information. What does it mean, reincarnation? There are two kinds of ways to know who you used to be in your previous life. For instance, I already know what I used to be. That everyone who really wants to know, he can find out. What's the way to find out? Through something that he call hypnosis. Hypnosa. Hypnotizing people. I don't know if you ever saw in the movies or in all kinds of shows, they film it. It's not just hypnotizing people. They video it. And this is how it's been worked. You go to a parapsychologist, and he tells you, "I want you to stare on the wall. There is one dot. Stare over there and relax. Don't do anything." Or they have this famous clock, watch, that they move left and right, and you go like this until you become dizzy, and you now sleeping. What's the point? Then he controls your soul completely. He's really not talking to you, to your body. He's talking directly. He circumvents the body completely. And he goes directly into your soul. What does it mean to go directly to your soul? The soul obviously cannot talk without the body. This is how it works. Every one of us has conscious and subconscious. Muda, tat muda. What is the difference? We have, it's like in computer. In computer, you have every day's work. You're working with this every day. It comes up right away. Then you have a storage. It's in the memory of the computer. If once in a while you write a word from 10 years ago, the computer will go and search in your archives and find that once you used it and pull up the file. If I will ask you now, do you remember that you used to have this article in your computer? 10 years ago you put it there. No, I never did it. But once you put the first word in, the computer pulls it out. This is exactly how it works in your brain. I'll give you an example of what I mean. A person is walking on the street and his wife is watching him from the window. When he comes home, she said to him, Moshe, I saw that you love the floor very much. For half an hour, I saw you coming from far away. You're looking at the floor nonstop. Can you tell me everything you saw on the floor? He said, are you crazy? I wasn't looking at the floor. I've been thinking about all kinds of things. You know, I walk with my face down. So you cannot describe me anything you saw on the floor? No, man, who pays attention to it? No problem. Then, 2 minutes later, she wants to hang a picture on the wall. Oh, I don't have nails. Oh, wait a minute. I saw a nail next to the bus stop in the street. I'll go get it for you. A minute ago, she asked him, Moshe, can you tell me one of the things you saw on the floor? No, I didn't see. Why he doesn't know? Because everything a person sees in his lifetime, even the most irrelevant things that he doesn't even care about it. People walking the street, people crossing the street, buses, noise, music in the background, somebody, whatever, noise of a television from the neighbor, everything is being recorded in your subconscious, whether you want it or not. Everything. You cannot escape one scene and one beep. It's all recorded. If I'm coming to ask you, what did you hear yesterday? You don't know any of it. Why? It's not in your conscious, it is in your subconscious. But when I will repeat one of the words that your subconscious recorded yesterday, it comes out right away into your conscious. That's how it works. And now you know the whole thing. And this is how the Israeli police catch robbers in Israel in the last 10 years. How they do it? A woman walking the street, an old lady. She holds her purse. Somebody comes with a motorcycle, grab her wallet, and run away. And she falls on the floor. You know, by the time they pick her up, the police comes. Did you see anything? No. What did you see? I just heard noise of a motorcycle behind me. The next thing, I was on the floor. I couldn't see anything. Now they're taking her into the police station, and a parapsychologist is coming and hypnotizing her. In the middle of the hypnosis that they do, she begins to say everything. She knows how he looks, what kind of mustache, his ponytail, his earring, tattoo that he had, clothes, shoes, everything she knows. She describes everything, even though she's now sleeping. When she comes back into reality now, they're showing her now a video of what she just said. She now wouldn't know it. Sometimes they taking you reverse in your history. That's called regression. This is unbelievable. What's regression? There's a lot of material about it in the internet. You don't have to believe me. You can continue your research later. Everything here is 100% authentic. We don't add anything. The truth is strong enough. You don't need to change it. You bring it as it is. It's very convincing. So you have to know, what does it mean, regression? You go to this person and he say, okay, you are 40 years old. Let's go back to the year 2000, when you were 32 years old. Tell me what you see, August 12, 2 o'clock. Where are you now? Now you're in 2008. He's bringing you live 8 years ago at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And now you begin to talk exactly what you did 8 years ago, 2 o'clock. I'm in a bus stop, it's raining, freezing, describing it live. Then it says, let's go back another 20 years, when you were, whatever, 5 years old. This is a 40 years old person. He begins to talk with the voice of 5 years old kid. He's 40. Now you're looking at a 40 years old face, speaking like a 5 years old kid from kindergarten. Then you say, okay, let's go back 4.5 years back, 6 months old. Guess what happened? This 40 years old guy or girl fall on a rug and begins to call and makes voices of a baby. Then they say, let's go back another 10 years. That's before he was born. Sometimes you hear silence. No answer, no response. Why? Because the soul at those years wasn't in this world. It wasn't inside the body. It was waiting for another reincarnation. It's not happened right away. Sometimes it can happen 50 years later. God is waiting for the opportunity to take this person who just died. When will I find him the right parents and the right atmosphere to give him a second chance for his test in life? I don't have it. I cannot force it on him. Put him on hold. 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Sometimes a person has been reincarnated in a week. Like some of the films that I have with some Arab Druze. The same year they died, they've already been reincarnated in a different village, 5 minutes driving from the same town. And they remember the previous life. We'll talk about it soon. So, now you're going back to 1940, 1939. In the middle of the regression, a girl started to scream in Yiddish. She doesn't know any word in Yiddish today. She never heard this language in her life. In the middle, she's screaming in Yiddish, she screams, and then her head falls down and no more talking. When they play the video, they bring someone who understands Yiddish. Guess what she was screaming? She was number 17, standing in front of the Nazi, they're shooting the people. Once they got to her, silence. Sometimes a person speaks in a language that he doesn't know today. When you're playing the video, just imagine how weird it is. You look at yourself speaking Arabic or Persian or Italian, whatever, depending where you live in your previous life. You don't know what you're saying. When they bring translation, you begin to understand who you used to be in your previous life. Unbelievable. That's called regression. Sometimes it's a man speaking like a woman, or the other way around, a woman speaking with the loud voice of a man. In some of this regression, they went back to the time of King Pharaoh in Egypt. One Egyptian carpenter describing live that he makes an eagle to put in the grave of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. A year later, after this regression, they found, the archaeologist in Egypt found a piece of that eagle that this person was describing. And now it's in a museum in Europe. How to believe? I'll give you some examples of the reincarnation. Before we go into what the scientist says, let's see what the Torah told us about this. The student of the Ari HaKadosh 500 years ago, Rabbi Chaim Vital. I used to walk sometimes with my Rebbe in the field. Before I continue, I want to mention one more thing. Some people in the world, very few percentage-wise, remember their previous life without hypnotizing them. They come to a place, they recognize the place, and they'll tell you everything in this place. They remember that they used to live here, who they used to be, their wife, their children. They even take you to the house where they used to live. The Rabbi Chaim Vital say, I went with my Rebbe on the field, and he used to tell me, look at this tree. There's a person used to call such and such, he's being reincarnated in this tree. There are four kinds of reincarnations according to the Torah. In normal people, like we've been reincarnated again for another test, other reincarnations are strictly punishment. For instance, reincarnation in animals, dogs, ox, snakes, crows, different reincarnations according to what sins the person made. Some reincarnations are in raw material, rock, water, walls, amazing. Some reincarnations are in fruits and vegetables. A person eats it, that's when the soul separates from that object. And he says, I used to walk with my Rebbe and he pointed the rock. And he said, this is a person that used to slaughter animal and sell people non-kosher meat. He's been reincarnated in this rock. He is from that city, from this year. Rabbi Chaim Vital says, I didn't believe it. I went to that town and I gave them the name of that person if anybody knows him. Not once, not twice, many times. And they used to say, of course, he used to be the butcher here. He died 10 years ago, 8 years ago. And there was problems with him. They called him selling non-kosher meat. The exact same story. Because the Ari HaKadosh had holy vision, Ruach HaKodesh. We don't have it. This is an example from the Torah. The Torah say, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, is a reincarnation of Hevel. His father-in-law, Jethro, Itro, is a reincarnation of Cain. Cain killed Hevel because he was jealous that he had two twins with him and he only had one, the Torah says. That's the secret on that story. What's the correction? Cain was reincarnated in a person named Itro, and he had to correct his sins, his murder, by giving Moshe a woman. Who is the woman? Zipporah, his daughter, to be his wife. That's how he erased his sin from previous life. How many years later, Moshe and Itro from Hevel? We're talking 2,400 years later. 2,400 years he's been reincarnated to correct a sin from 2,000 years ago. And there are hundreds of examples like this. It's too complicated. But let's move on. The story of Indeka Gonreta from Sri Lanka. He was born in 1962. He remembered his previous life. Dr. Ian Stevenson started to check this case in 1968 and published it in 1974. Indeka started to speak age 2 years old. He described his previous life. Now this is without hypnosis, without hypnotizing him. 2 years old baby begins to describe his previous life. I used to be in the city of Matara, in the southern beach of Sri Lanka. I have a gorgeous mansion. I have a Mercedes car, elephants, servants. My private servant is named Parmedaza. He is also my chauffeur driving the Mercedes for me. 2 years old kid, describes himself as a rich businessman. Dr. Stevenson drives there, goes to that place, Sri Lanka, and begin to investigate, and they brought him to the house of this person. The servant is still there. The elephants are still there. Who was he in his previous life? He is K.J. Verizinga that died in 1960. He was selling trees to the factories. 1960 he died. 1968 he started to talk. So that means he was born 6 years later in a new body. And only 2 years later, he started to describe his memory from his previous lives. There's a famous clip about a Druze kid when he was 3 years old in Israel. I'm sure some of you maybe heard of it or saw it by Rabbi Amnon Yitzchak tape. It's in the internet. 3 years old, he's starting to speak all day about one word, Az. That's what he say, Az. They check the Arabs all over the town. No Az. When he became 7 years old, he comes to his father and says, take me to my wife. Now, what's good about this story is that in the Israeli television, unfortunately, they're not so crazy about religion. They're not so crazy. And they brought it in prime time in the news with their own camera crew inside Mabat Lachadashot. They went to that village filming that person because they investigated him. They saw it cannot be a trick. He said to his father, take me to my wife. 7 years old kid. Who is your wife? You're crazy. They brought a psychologist from France to check him. She says, a genius kid. Perfectly fine. No problem. They take him to that place, to that village. He tells his father, make a right, make a left. This is my house. They knock on the door. The woman, an Arab woman, 42, 43 years old, opening the door. She will see a kid, a father, the cameraman. Can I help you in Arabic? Yes, I'm your husband. Whatever his name was, I don't remember. I'm Ahmed. That was his name, whatever. Well, what, is this a joke? She said, wait. You don't believe me? Remember I used to cook for me this? Come, let me go. I want to take my uniform. The Druze volunteers to go to the Israeli army. They fight with Israel. He said, I want to show you where my uniform is. He goes to the closet, he opened, his Israeli uniform are there. Then he said, I want to go to my attic. There's a bag full of the letters I used to send her from Lebanon. How he died, he was 44 years old in his reserve in the army in the war in Lebanon. The building in Tzor, in Lebanon, collapsed on their head. 70-something soldiers died, if you remember that, more than 25 years ago. That's how he died, when he was 44 years old. Right away, that year, he was reincarnated again, and a kid, 10 minutes ride from there, in a different Arab Druze village. It's interesting. Druze became Druze again. And now, he takes the bag out of the attic, and he tells the reporter, I can even tell you my ID from the army. There are 7 digits. He remembers 5 out of them, 5, from his previous life. Bottom line, they show the album of the family. Here is Fatma, here is Saida, here is Mustafa, here is Ahmed. Here is, he knows everyone from the previous life. Then he sits with his cousin. Remember how he used to go drink beer and dance in a club? 7 years old. He's speaking to his cousin. The cousin is still 44. And he's 7. You understand? Actually, so he died 37 plus 7. He should have been 44 if he wouldn't die today. And then he used to be a volleyball player. They take him to the team, and he said, I used to play here. This is my friend. I used to go down. I used to go up. In the end of this, they're showing him standing next to his grave from his previous life, crying. So the woman asked him, do you feel bad standing here next to your grave? He said, yes, very, very strong pain. He's still mourning his life from his different body, even though now he's another person. It's very, very common, I don't know why, don't ask me why, by the Arab Druze, number one in the world, of remembering their previous lives. God made to every rule an exception to the rule. That's a rule in the Torah, in the creation. Kol klal yesh lo yotze min haklal. As a reason, because when you make an exception to the rule, you cherish the rule. You appreciate the rule. For instance, none of you say to God every day, thank you for my eyes that I'm able to see. You take it for granted. None of you say, thank you for my legs that I'm able to walk. None of you say thank you that I'm able to eat every day breakfast, bagel, lax, everything is working for me. You don't feel lucky. When will you feel lucky? When you go to the bank and you see a handicapped person in a wheelchair, he cannot even open the door to make a deposit. He's standing there in the sun, sitting there hoping somebody will come and open the door. Then you say, wow, how lucky I am, I have legs. Psh, imagine if I'll be like him. Why? There's an exception to the rule. To cherish what you are. Otherwise, you would not, you'll take it for granted. That's the way it should be. Ah, when you see there is other people, you feel lucky. Then you say thank you to Hashem. Then, just before, I'm going to show you the movies. And I'm also skipping a lot. This lecture is much more interesting, but since I combine two lectures, I have to skip the last story, and then I show you the clips and give you some time for questions. Shanti was born in Delhi, in India, in 1926. When she was 3 years old, she started to tell her parents about the city of Mothra. She said that her husband's name is Kaidernath. And she died when she gave birth to her son after 10 days. You know how it is. You have a little baby. You think she's hallucinating. Later, when she grew up, she started to describe every day her previous life. The parents sent someone to the city of Mathura, and they found out that Kaidernath is still alive. They sent him a letter and told him about the girl that claimed that she's his ex-wife. Kaider showed up, surprisingly, knock on their doors one day. When they opened up the door, the girl started to scream, Kaider! The little girl. She remembered her husband from the previous life. He recognized her right away. She started to describe all the great food she used to cook for him. And then she asked him, why did you get remarried? You didn't keep your promise to me. Now it's personal stuff here. She said, you promised you'll never get remarried. He said, she's right. I really promised her. And then she says, They said, okay, let's take you to the city of Matra. We want to follow her to see how she behaves. As soon as they arrived at Reif station, there were hundreds of people waiting in a station. One of them was her brother-in-law from previous life. Right away, she pointed at him and she said, I know him, his name is Gita. He is his brother. Then she gave them direction to the carriage, how to go to the house. Even though they renovated the house, she recognized it. And she showed them all the hidden places inside the house. She knew everything. And then she went to a corner and she took a shovel and started to dig in a corner of one of the rooms. Remember, there was no marble yet, 1926. As she digging in the ground, she looks at him, she says, where's the money? I hid the money here. He says, she's right, after she died, I opened it and I took all the money out. So obviously, she left no doubt. She remembered all her previous life. I have a picture, somehow, bad luck, by mistake I erased it from the lecture, of a young woman in England. She's about 23 years old, with five old people between 60 to 75. That's their ages. Has a beautiful picture that was, I think, in the BBC in England. And they ask, who is the mother? So there's two old ladies there. Everybody thinks it's one of them. And they say, here, she is the mother. She had Alzheimer's. And she fell in a valley, in a Chevy somewhere, into the water, and she died. Then, 20 years later, her kids were still looking for her, putting ads. Anybody found her? Anyone? The ads were staying. One day, she walked and she see an ad. And she see, I know this guy. He used to be my son. She comes to the place, young girl, young woman, 20-something years old. She knock on the door, hi, I'm your mother. Don't worry, remember how I took you to the doctor? Remember how you didn't want to eat this? Remember. They ask her 100 questions. She answered 98 correctly. She made two mistakes. Well, it's normal. Even we don't remember everything. She remembered all the things she used to do with these five old people. And remember, she's in her 20s and they're 50 years older than her. She's been reincarnated and 20 years later she reunited with her family in a different body. I want to connect the computer. I just hope it's going to work. Okay. That's the charge. All right, so does it recognize it? Okay. No, what's now? Oh, yeah, it's working. Volume. It's not working. It should work. It's very weird. It's eliminating the computer.
Okay. What? No, why I can't hear it? Oh yeah, we didn't connect this. Yeah, this two. Oh no, wait a minute. This is the one.
This and this.
No? Okay, plug it back in.
It's one plug.
Okay, we connect the
one. So, Mr. Piper, you drop.
It's not working? No? I don't know what to do.
I know where to go. I'm on a bridge. He hits me head on. Such in.
Here. No,
there's no. You can put a microphone here.
Yeah, but it's not going to be able to see it. Oh, we're able to bring it all the way here? Oops. All right. He's going to come? Oh, no. Okay, let me go around. It's not gonna fit. No, it's not gonna come. Okay, can you pass me the computer? Just pass it to me. Let's hope it's gonna reach. Do you mind holding this 1 second?
Sure.
No, I can now.
Okay. Want me to come in front? Yeah. I can come in
front. Can you plug it back? No, no, yeah, just a little bit, yeah. Okay, I just hope it's gonna. No, what's the story now? I can't believe this.
And died at an elderly age.
future. Maybe they don't traumatic accident themselves. But when I saw them, they were all ageless.
Okay.
But you say in your book you didn't see God or Jesus or anything that's like connected. That. In the distance, as I was approaching the gate, I'm often asked about this, as you might imagine. There really are a lot of magnificent structures inside the gate. And at the pinnacle of a great hill beyond them is a bright light. I have a distinct feeling that that is where God, and I was headed in that direction when suddenly I was returned to Earth.
Now, how did that happen? You were returned to Earth how? What do you remember?
All I remember is being at the gates and about to enter after a lot of other magnificent things that I saw and heard. As it turns out, 90 minutes after the truck hit me, a man climbed into the car, and because he felt like God spoke to him, started praying over me even though he knew I was dead. Suddenly I found myself back in the car, under the tarp, in the dark. He's singing a hymn, and he's making me sing it with him, and I had no idea what had happened to me.
What about a doctor, a scientist, somebody say to you, look, you had a head trauma, and when you have a head trauma, all things, and you were a believer, friend, you know, from the jump. I mean, you're a religious man, this was in your mind, head trauma, hallucinations, it's real to you, but it isn't really real.
Ever happened to me. It now defines my reality here. I know that how temporary this is. I mean, we know we all do. None of us get out of this life alive.
What I guess the bottom line is, if somebody doesn't believe you, and
right.
You know, no, some people watch right now.
Maybe it came out.
Anything you say to make them believe.
This is a very remarkable, unique situation. I saw things there that I wouldn't have expected to see if I was having it.
All right. I guess this film doesn't have luck today. All right. תחבר לי רק חזרה את המיקרופון ושידליקו את האור.
Okay. As I said, I have the clips. The situation here technically is not allowing me to show it, but this is the one clip. I have the other one, which is much better, about the kid that remembers his previous life. And before we finished, I just want to give you some time for questions, but before we get into the questions, I want to remind you that on the 24th of December, maybe it should lower it a little bit. On the 24th of December, we're going to have a seminar here, a long weekend, from the 24th, from Wednesday to Sunday. We have all the information here. And it's basically combined. I'm going to come here, Bezrat Hashem, on the 24th with some of the greatest speakers from Israel, from Arachiv. It's going to be in English and in Hebrew. Rav Pereira here. You can speak to him, and basically it's going to be an event that you don't really want to miss. You know, we're not limited on time. We have with the meals and the music and all the greatest speakers. They have the brochure here. Anyone who is interested to come for that event, please contact us right after the lecture. Also, we have a lecture tomorrow. It's going to be in Hebrew. Tomorrow I'm giving a lecture in Hebrew. We should have the topics right here in the brochures. And we have two more lectures. I'm here four nights in a row, so tonight is over. We have tomorrow, the next night, and the next night. I'm not familiar with the places, so you have to ask the organizer where it's going to be. Different topics than tonight. Tonight is one topic, tomorrow is different topics. Tomorrow I'm going to speak more about Torah and science. Those of you who for whatever reason cannot come tomorrow or the next of the days, we have CDs here, three different kinds of CDs, DVDs. One is Torah and Science in English, DVD with music, all the explanation. It's about 3.5 hours, scientific proof, Mount Sinai, strong ethics, very, very powerful DVDs. You don't want to miss it. Now we have one in Hebrew, the same one, but in Hebrew, DVD. I have the famous debate that I had with that Christian priest, the professor. We had more than 1 million viewers in the internet.
many tens of non-Jews wants to convert just because of that debate. Judaism versus Christianity in English. Some of you I see that already saw it. It's on a DVD here, or you can just go into the website. You're going to have it. All these lectures, eventually the English one just came out yesterday. So it's the first time I'm giving them out. It's right here. I just bought them yesterday. They came in. First people will get it. It's here. I give everything I do, I give for free. The website is for free. The DVDs are for free. I would recommend each one of you, because according to the Torah, the best mitzvah with the greatest reward is to save Jewish souls, teach them about the purpose of life, teach them about the Torah, and bring them closer to our Father in heaven. Most of you don't have the time and don't have the knowledge, probably, to start arguing scientifically with people. This is from A to Z. A normal, rational human being doesn't need more than this DVD. Even the most skeptical people, the people who are anti-religion, once they watch these DVDs, a very, very high chance they will stop with their nonsense. Some of them will become partially religious, and believe it or not, many of them will become eventually fully religious, keeping the laws of Judaism and saving themselves as individuals and helping our nation as in general. Anybody who wants to participate on distributing CDs, very, very, very cheap. It's $1 a DVD with the printing, couldn't be cheaper. We just give it for free. Here, everyone who wants to take it can take it for free. He wants to participate in distributing some, it's going to be his merit. This will come to non-religious Jews. This guy will start keeping the Shabbat. This guy will put tefillin. This guy will stop cheating on his wife. This guy will be a better father. It will affect a lot of people. Every mitzvah that these people are going to do goes to your account. You can be 200 years in the world to come. The descendants of these people, next generation, next and next and next generation, are all influenced from their grandfather that became righteous. And obviously, that's a very great investment. For a few dollars, the CDs are traveling. I have one family in New York. One. They're all over. But the guy that I met in New York with his wife, one disc we gave him, $1, one disc. 17 people became fully, strictly religious with $1. And I know the guy that donated that dollar. Donate $1,500, the $1,500 disc. A bunch of them I gave this guy. He gave his sister, her husband, his brother and his wife, and the children, and the parents, and him and his wife, and other friends. And today, this guy is organizing seminars to the biggest speakers in the world. And this dollar investment that the Jew that gave it continued to earn for him unbelievable amount of reward. This is an opportunity you don't have to. You lose if you don't do it. It's up to you. I will give time for questions. I'm sure you have some questions about some of the things we saw. Yes.
What happens to a Jew who looks into life after death, getting in contact with
people? Louder, I cannot hear.
What happens to a Jew who contacts the dead, who goes from medium to contact the dead?
Die younger. Shorten his life. Playing with fire. Yeah.
I have a question. I agree with what you said regarding reincarnation, like over life after death, that people see their family and they feel everything and they are like above and they see the doctor. But I do still think that the Tana and the light, it's because his brain was shutting off and this is like going backwards. And I do think that this is what he sees when he was first born, is going through the tunnel and see light, which is the light of the room where he was born. But I'm not making any excuse to say that I don't believe of whatever you saw. Yes, the soul see everything, everything's right. The only thing I have a problem with is the tunnel, because it's described.
I think you chose
the tunnel when the baby comes out and see the light.
I think that you just forgot two things that I mentioned. If you maybe forgot, maybe.
Okay.
Tell me if I'm right or wrong. You forgot one thing, that
this, the people describing having conversation, full conversation with the light. It's not that they just all see light, a tunnel, and it's over. They have an entire conversation with this light. The light asks them, you ready to die? And all kinds of people. Sometimes he asks their name. There's a list. I skipped a lot of the things, but there were an entire conversation with that light. That's one thing. Second thing is that this is not only according to science. If only the scientists would claim it, then maybe you're right. There could be some of the things they say. It's not 100%. This was written in the Torah. The Torah said no one dies before he sees the lights of God. And the Torah says clearly that because they're anxious to go towards that light, as they all describe it, the Torah didn't say that this light is as a memory of being in his mother womb and coming out. Plus, being inside his mother womb doesn't really have any lights. He's closed in a very dark room over there until he finally comes to the world. That's not nothing near a tunnel that you go and you fly inside and the beginning is dark and there's noise, plus relatives and the rest of the story. If you put everything together, you see that what you say, it doesn't make 100% sense. You cannot put it together because it's like ignoring some of the details. Yeah. Okay, you're right. If God wanted us to know our previous life, he would make us born with the ability to remember our previous life. It's no problem for him. He could make each one of us remember all his lives, all his images, all his bodies, who used to be his wife, who used to be everything. The reason that God didn't make us able to remember our past, for one very simple and convincing reason. If a person knows his past, it may, most of the time, not always, but it may eliminate his free choice. I'll give you an example. Let's say a guy is 45 years old. He's very anxious to get married for 20, 25 years. He did everything. He went to this single party, and to this shadchan, and to this ed, and to that party, and to... He killed himself with dates, spending money, doing, trying, and he doesn't get married. If he was able to know his previous life, and he would know that in his previous life he was a humanizer, a person that tortured ladies, raped them, abused them, giving them very hard time. Let's say he was married 3 times in his previous life. Each one of his wives had hell in her life thanks to this guy. And now God punished him by reincarnating him to die lonely, single, no kids, no ladies. Now frustration and disappointments 100%. If this person, age 18, would know that all his life is going to suffer, he would commit suicide without a doubt. Most of them. It would eliminate his test. He wouldn't be able to know I'm heading to another 6 years of torture. What keeps us going is the hope that tomorrow will become a better day. You understand? One smart person asked, what's better, to be miserable rich or miserable poor? So everybody right away says, hey, of course miserable rich. At least you have comfortable life. The truth is, it's the opposite. Because someone who's very wealthy and is miserable, he has no hope to live. That's it. Nothing will make him happy. Now he has plenty of money, he's not happy. What else will make him happy? A person that doesn't have money always lives with the hope, one day I'll make it, where the plan go through, I'll be wealthy and I'll become happy. It's nonsense, but the illusion keeps him going. You understand? The fact that a person knows his previous life most of the time will eliminate his free choice. Yes? Louder, please.
Yeah, I would like to know if when we are born, our soul knows our destiny. Because sometimes we have intuition, things that we should, avoid. And it's like our soul is telling us to be aware of.
Very good question. The answer to your question is that when a person comes to the life, he has a purpose. The creation has a purpose. The body and the soul and the animals and everything in this world, every creation has a creator, and the creator doesn't just do things for his fun. Everything has a purpose. And the fact that the creator made us a world that will be here for a few thousand years and he put us inside a body to live through the test, and he gave us the Torah. Torah means in Hebrew instructions for life, and what to do, what we should not do. In the Torah, he taught us the purpose of the creation. I'm speaking about this in my DVD here. But each one of us, besides the general purpose that we have as a nation, as human being, we have an individual purpose. My purpose and your purpose is different. How do we know what's our purpose? This question was asked. The answer is, whatever is the most difficult commandment for you to keep, that's your main test in life. Which means, for a person, a woman, that it's very difficult for her to dress modestly. It's no problem for her to keep the Sabbath. She can be generous, giving donations, whatever. To dress modestly, she fights with her desires. She constantly fails, and again and again and again. So she says, you know what? I'm keeping everything. One thing I'm doing, what's the problem? That's her main correction in life. That's why it's the most difficult for her, that particular thing. Her friend, however, can be a twin sister. Same body, same desire, supposedly. They have the same look, the same body, everything the same. But the twin, she has no desire to dress not modest. Dress completely modest without any difficulties. Why? One purpose of the first twin is modesty. She used to dress not modest, provocative. Now that's why it's very difficult for her, because she has to work very hard to correct it, to earn. If it's not hard, there's no reward. It has to be hard. The Torah says, I'm testing you, I'm giving you hard difficulties to test you. Would you follow my laws or not? It's a test, it's a game. It's a game, you're earning points. The same thing, what difficult for me is not difficult for him, and the other way around. So now each one of us, according to the difficulties we know what's our main thing to correct. There's another way to know. If we are attracted very much to specific laws, some of us very, very anxious to learn. Some of us is willing to do everything for bringing guests into his house and giving food and bringing poor people and help them. He has desire for this. Some of us has desire for, making people religious. We call, we make emails, we arrange lectures, we give out CDs. God is directing the person to his main purpose in life. It's impossible that a person would live here 60, 70, 80 years without knowing his purpose. So therefore, according to the way that our life is designed, that means what we have to go through. Sometimes we have two different, or three, or 10, or 20 different purposes. First, we have to do this. Later, we will have another purpose, and another one, and another one. And sometimes, we cannot fulfill the same purpose in the same body. We have to go to another body. For instance, if I have specific things in this life, that apply only to a man. The things that apply to a woman, I cannot do. I'm not a woman, I'm a man. Next life, if I will be reincarnated in a woman, then I'm going to have a mission that is designed according to woman. That's why God makes a person a woman or a man. Sometimes a person is a handicap, is limited. He can only do certain things. Or blind, or deaf. Everything is according to his test in life. No test of one Jew is 100% similar to another. Each one of our tests is different than the others. Yes? Jews are being reincarnated to Jews usually, with some exceptions. There's very few exceptions that it's possible that Jews will be reincarnated as non-Jews. Yes? Once the soul separates from the body?
Right. So it's detached, right? Separate. So how do you explain when they say that 17 are left intact? What does that mean?
That means the worms doesn't eat their body?
Yeah, but what does that mean?
Okay, there are few levels of righteous people. Some people, they fulfill their mission in life. They were died righteous. But we see that the worms eat their body. Some righteous people 6 years later, they open the graves against nature. There's not one hole in their body. They move them from Morocco to Israel, from Ashkenaz to Israel, perfectly complete. Why is it? There are two levels of righteous people. The highest level of a Jew is to sanctify the body like the soul. Most people, they sanctify the holy soul. They purify the soul, but they don't really address the body. The body. Some people get to such level that the body, which is only the envelope, become like the soul. It's a very high level. Therefore, the body is so holy that the worms have no permission to touch it. But, you know, this is all mystical, deep stuff. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I have answers that only God can answer. Remember, many of the things that we have in our mind and we are anxious to know, the truth is that there's no answer for it. I'll give you an example. What is the purpose of the entire creation? So we know, the Torah told us, I'm creating you, you are my children, I gave you the Torah, I'm testing you, I'm torturing you, I'm strict with you, I'm giving you all these tests, I'm feeding you, I'm starving you, I'm giving, I'm not giving, everything I do is to test you. Okay. What for? Okay, I got it. So part one is to test me. I'm in a test. Then what? Comes the Torah and say, to reward you in your end. Oh, very good. So I know the purpose of the test is to reward me. What question pops up right away? Reward me with other tests. Why are you giving me all these 7 years of tortures? Who needs this? Just create me in heaven. Comes the Torah and say, impossible. Why? God made us in his own image, not physical image. God doesn't have a physical image. Spiritual image, the same traits. Same traits. What's the traits of God? He wants to be deserved, which means no bread of shame, no mercy, which means when a person comes and he works very hard, he doesn't get embarrassed to ask for a salary. I deserve it, I work very hard. But if I walk in a store and no customer walk in all day, raining, snowing, nobody came. I sat all day and read a book. And at the end of the day, I'm very embarrassed to go to the boss, hey, give me $100. Why? I sat all day, do nothing. But the days that I work very hard, I'm not embarrassed. Why? I deserve it. No embarrassment. I don't deserve it. I suffer to get it. I still want to get it. I think I need it, but I suffer while I'm getting it. I feel embarrassed. I wish he would send me by the mail that I don't have to look at him when he gives me the money knowing I did nothing. What, where does it come from? The poor people that knock on the door for charity, they'll never come like this. Hey, tzedakah, please. No, they come. I'm sorry, you know. Why? He's almost crying. His head is down. He's half to the side like this. He's suffering hell now. Why? This is the way God designed us spiritually. That once we earn it, we enjoy it. We deserve it, great. When we don't deserve it, it's not perfect. Comes the next question. Okay, so that's why you designed us a test. That's why we have reward and punishment. Free choice, no problem. What's the problem for you, God? Change my personality. Change my nature. Make me not like you. Make me different. Make me that I can get free donations and gifts and everything, and I won't suffer. I enjoy it just as much when I work very hard for it. What's the problem? And create me in heaven without a test. The answer to this, we will never, ever know in this life. We won't know. Rambam says, if I knew all the secrets of God, I would be him. Very good. Perfect analogy. We do not know God's thoughts. How do I know? The Torah says. I knew it without the Torah. Everyone knows it. Can't compare yourself to the creator of the world. But in case you had a doubt, the Torah says, "Ki lo machshevotai machshevotechem." My thoughts are not your thoughts. My ways are not your ways. Comparing you to me is like comparing a worm to an eagle. It's an analogy. We got the message. What's the problem that we have? Our ignorance fools us sometimes to think, to hallucinate, that we know the secrets of God. That's why when we feel, for instance, on Thursday, Friday morning, all of us heard the horrible news from India, and it's natural, I'm not complaining, I know that the mind of the human being, especially the non-religious Jews, to begin with, they have doubts about God and how the world works, and never learned Torah, so they have a lot of questions to begin with, before the tragedies begin, before the Holocaust, before this. So once they see something like this, they feel like it justified their beliefs. Oh, you see, there's no din v'no dayan, no judgment, no, where is the justice? There's no justice. Look at this couple, they're bringing people from the street, cooking for them, taking care of them, sacrificing their privacy for people that they don't even know, and people walk in and shoot them and kill them. That's very convincing. However, there is one missing detail from the story that we don't think. We forget that these people, the 20, 30 years that they lived here, was only a drop from their real life. They've been here, who knows, in 20 or 30 or 40 different bodies, and each body they live, who knows how many years, could be hundreds of years altogether. And guess, in case that 20, 25 years ago, when they died in their previous body, God said to them in their judgment day, which is 1 year trial after the death, that's why we say Kaddish on the dead people for 1 year. In that famous trial that we're so scared to get there, he told them, I'm going to reincarnate you for very short life. You'll be slaves of the public because you neglected the public in your previous life. You disrespect people. Your correction to your soul will be to live short life. You take care of the people. One day somebody will come and shoot you and you go directly to heaven. No more reincarnation. You have the greatest billions of years of pleasure. We don't know it. Only God knows what really happened to them now. We all crying for him, and maybe they sitting over there and laughing, and they say, poor guys, they're crying for us. They would die to be where we are. Just giving you an example. I'm not making it up. Everything I tell you, it's in the Torah. You see, so we have a problem. We think we are capable of being in the level of the real judge, even though we have to admit that we don't know even 1/1,000,000% of every person that we speak to. For instance, you see me here for the first time. Do you know who I am? Can you tell me one detail about my life? No. If something will happen to me, God forbid, what are you going to say tomorrow? Where is the justice? This rabbi came here, he came all the way from New York, he gave a lecture, he's making people religious, boom, something happened. How do you know? Maybe I deserve 1,000,000 times what I got. Nobody really knows. By looking at a person's beard, that doesn't mean he's an angel. There's a lot of things behind the scenes. That's besides the point. But even if the person is perfectly righteous and he dies young, not necessarily is a punishment for him. Could be the greatest thing. If we only knew what goes next for him, we would die to replace him. But we don't think that way because we are not educated in the Torah. That's why there's a lot of mysteries that we translating it as bad. I'll give you many examples. A person lost all his money and he's crying and crying and crying. And then one day he finds out that because he lost all his money, he had to move from that business to another city. And then 10 years later, somebody went into the business and killed all the people. And now he just realized after 10 years of crying for the $100,000 that he lost, he just realized now that God wanted to save his life, and the only way to get him out of his business is to make his partner steal away his money and kick him out of the business. And 10 years later, he just found out that his life got saved. But 10 years, he was crying for no reason. Why he was crying? Because he's not educated. If he would be educated, he would say, God, you know what's good for me. You know what I deserve. Just help me to be righteous, that I don't need any punishments, that it will go smooth for me. But if it doesn't go smooth for me, I might as well get my punishment here. Who wants to get it there? Yes.
If a relative died, and when you die, you don't see them in Olam Haba because they're reincarnated, is there a chance like that?
That's a very famous question. Which one of the bodies are going to resurrect in the resurrection of the dead? After Mashiach comes, it's going to be 40 years, all the dead people from the previous generation, the righteous people, will resurrect. Only the righteous one. So those who resurrect, they lived here in many, many bodies. Which body will return? the most famous, the most righteous body that he had in all the reincarnations. However, when a person is being reincarnated in this life, right? You may ask me, why we say Kaddish on him? He's already born 2 months later, he was reincarnated. There's no point of saying Kaddish for him. He is now the baby of the biggest rabbi in the world. He's a very lucky guy. Why we cry for him? We say Kaddish for him for 1 year. We go what the Torah told us to do. You have to know one thing. When a person is being reincarnated, not his entire soul is being reincarnated. Only a part of it. We don't have an understanding how it works. A part of the soul stays in a grave forever. That's why the Jews have a custom to go pray by the graves of the righteous Jews. In Tzfat, in the north of Israel, many of the Tanaim buried, Rambam, in Tvat Iberia. We go and we pray there. Why? Why, we worship the stone like the Muslims? No, God forbid. That's not the reason. Why we go to pray by his grave? I pray here, it's the same thing. It's a synagogue, I pray here. Why do I have to go to his grave? Because the reason is, it's like a lawyer. It's like coming to the trial by myself or coming with a knowledgeable lawyer. What's the difference? I go, I stand by the Rambam, and I pray, and I say to the Rambam, help me out with your merit that bring my prayer. Not that I need you. Hashem listens to a prayer of every Jew. Help me out with your zchut, that thanks to your merit, my prayers will be accepted faster. But the real ideal is, the real ideal is that a Jew should aim directly to Hashem, not to the rabbis, not to their graves, not to any son of God and this and that. A real good Jew is a Jew that connected to Hashem 100% without middlemen. Yes?
I just wanted to go back to end of times, and we don't know the exact date. We know that the Christian calendar began in 6000. So I just wanted to ask, we all clear that it's nearing, it's coming. So what should happen now and what should happen in the year 6000?
Well, I have an entire lecture about it. Briefly, I'll answer you that it will be one day the world will wake up and will hear a huge siren in the world. Big siren all over the world. What's the siren gonna be? The shofar of Eliyahu Navi. There's a person that became an angel. God took him to Olam Haba, to the world to come, with his body. There's 10 people like this in history. One of them was Eliyahu Navi. He became an angel. He was a person like me and you, very holy person, much better than us, but holy person. Thinks he reached such a high level. God took him with his body, sanctified, Kidesh et HaChomer. This Eliyahu Navi had the merit to announce the beginning of the salvation, as the prophet wrote, Hine Anochi Sholeach Lachem et Eliyahu Navi Beyom HaDin HaGadol VaNorah. There's all things about it, that Eliyahu Navi will come 3 days before the Mashiach will appear. He will begin to announce it, and everybody will become very excited, because anywhere we're going to hear that the Mashiach comes from the Olive Mountain in Jerusalem. Now there is a description of what's going to happen. Where does it happen? Read Zechariah 14. It says that the mountain will split to two. It's like an earthquake. One will shift to the right, one will shift to the left. It's going to become a huge valley. All the nations will gather against Israel and go to occupy Jerusalem. All of them, Christian, Muslims, all of them, united, the entire world, will decide it's been enough for us that we're fighting one another. Our real enemy are the Jews. Let's all do one hand and go and occupy Jerusalem and whatever. I don't want to go into details. It's very, very discouraging what's going to happen. If you're brave, read it. But after we're going to suffer tremendously for a certain period of time, I'm not sure, according to the prophecy, it's not so clear how long it's going to take. It can be days, it can be weeks, it can be months. It's not so clear. But it will be a horrible time. Eventually, once when we were just about to be finished, God will enter the situation and start saving us from them. And from this moment on, the revenge that he will do to all these nations, hard to believe what punishments they're going to get. You read it over there, you won't believe. I just give you one example. Their eyes will melt out of their hose and spill like water. That's what's going to happen to them. To all the goyim that torture Israel for the last 2,000-3,000 years. One by one. There will be non-Jews that will not get hurt. They don't deserve to get hurt. Right? Justice goes for everyone. No discrimination. If it's a righteous Arab, he's not a terrorist, he prayed to God, and he's kind, he's doing charity, and he's, you know, good, decent person, there's no reason for him to get hurt. Only those who push, donate, Hamas, Hezbollah, all these people that always donate for murdering people, they are the ones who are going to pay the price. This is what's going to happen. Now, with all this time, after the big Gog and Magog war, 4 billion people will die. How do I know? Because the Torah say 2/3 of the people in the world will die constantly. The other third, which is about 2 billion, will survive temporarily. And God will begin to screen one by one. Some will die also. Some will make it, but after very difficult time, a period. And some will make it very smooth. Even though it's going to be a horrible situation in the world, they won't get hurt even a bit. Mamash, clear miracle. So the Torah says, what's the advice to be in this category, to get saved smoothly? And nitzol migir midin gog umagog, you cannot get saved unless if you have lots of Torah learning and gmilut chasadim. You care for other Jews. Help them, donate, invite, bring them, invite them to lectures, help them with money, help them paying the rent, the mortgage, everyone according to his abilities, you know. Some people cannot donate, they need donations. Some people have a lot of money, but they're very stingy. It's time to open the wallets. People think right now, since the economy is going to be the worst it's ever been, I might as well keep every dollar. Naturally, they write. But there's a higher level than this. If a person show God that he saved $2-3 million or more, and is very worried now, let me keep it. At least it will keep me going for the next 20 years to get food, rent, mortgage, whatever I need. Why am I going to start giving out money to all these miserable Jews that are starving? So the big thing is, if a person that will have money for himself, to secure himself, will come and show that he cares for his brothers and give, even though it may shorten his safety. Safety will, instead of be 20 years, it can be only 10 years or 5 years. That's a sign that this person has confidence in God. Somebody like this will get saved. But someone who is egoistic will have problems. It's all the opposite of what we think. When a person thinks, I'm going to save, I'm going to do pension plan, this, insurance, life insurance, this investment, that investment, what God showing us? No investment is safe. You put money in Citibank. Did you believe that you're going to have to run a week ago to get the money out because tomorrow Citibank is bankrupt? The biggest bank in the world, the biggest bank in 200 countries. Thousands of people have to not to go to work on that Friday to run because their stock went down to $3. Another hour or two, you would hear Citibank is like Wachovia, like Washington Mutual, like all the other investment banks. And the government had no choice but to save them. The government now is forcing to save Ford and GM and many other places. Why? You know what's going to happen if they won't save them? There will be 3 million Americans unemployed, extra. Why 3 million? Ford and GM doesn't have 3 million employees. But all the companies and the businesses that relates to them, if you see in America, tire company, plastic company, aluminum company, a leather company that makes the leather seat. So many things, computer, speedometer, this, that, lights, light bulbs. You know how many companies are connected to them? How many people work to make Ford and GM? You have no idea. 3 million families will starve. 3 million families, it's going to be another 10, 15 million non-Jews that are hungry. Do you think you're going to be able to drive a car on the street as a Jew? Do you think you're going to be able to enter this building safely on Shabbat? He'll wait for you by the door. Give me money. My children are dying. You guys have a lot of money. What are you going to say? No? And I'll knock on your door, especially the Jewish territories. It happens in the past. I'm not making it up. It happened before the Holocaust. One night, they burned hundreds of synagogues out of their frustration. It always starts with financial crisis. That's what brought the Holocaust. Why? Because the Torah says, "En ben David ba." עד שלא תכלה פרוטה מן הכיס. We trusting the money. Our money is the real God for us. Those with the beard, without the beard, if you really investigate them deeply in their heart, most of us, our real God is the money. We're willing to die for the money, but we're not willing to die for God. And what's the proof? I'll give you an example. Would you go, let's assume that really to commit suicide will be a big mitzvah, like the idiot thinks, to blow themselves on innocent people. Let's just for the argument say that if you go and explode in a mosque and kill 100 Arabs, you have the greatest heaven after that. One of us will have the guts to do it? We wouldn't do it. We're embarrassed to pray in the airport. They put a mat in the middle of Kennedy Airport in front of 5,000 people. Allah, in the middle of the airport. We're not embarrassed. We look around. We're going to pray here now. Look in the terminals. We always hide somewhere. Why we don't stand in front of them? Itkadal, itkadash, meraba. Why they allowed and we are not allowed? When they blew up the head of Ahmed Yassin, everybody was happy in Israel. A missile went right into his head. He was in a wheelchair. It was the source of all the bad of the Hamas. So it was very good news for the Jews. Oh, another enemy was wiped out. Not that many people paid attention to the detail in the news that day. When I heard that, I got very disappointed. Why? Not that he died. Don't suspect me. I got very disappointed what time and where he got killed. This despicable, disgusting murderer, cruel beast, was murdered at 5 o'clock in the morning, coming out of the mosque, finishing his prayer. When we come in front of God after 120 years, he's going to show us this murderer, how he used to go at 4:30 in the morning with his wheelchair to the mosque. Where are we going to hide as the real children of God that have the real book and put it on the shelf and never even open it? Where are we going to hide from the embarrassment? They show us all this despicable murderer screaming, Allahu Akbar. You see what happened to them? The Israeli Air Force exploded them to pieces. The people who just stand there, they see their father, their brother, everyone blew up to pieces. What's the first thing they scream? God is great. Why God is showing us these filthy animals like this? To show us, when you're not like that, I'm going to send you this monster to show you what you should have been. We should have been fanatic. What's the embarrassment of being fanatic, loving God? Don't get me wrong. The Torah never say to kill. You're not allowed to kill an animal. You're not allowed to kill a goy. You're not allowed to kill. A war is a war. It's a different story. They attack you, you're allowed to defend yourself. Well, you're not allowed just to go and kill a goy. Some Jews making mistakes. They think it's permitted. It's permitted to steal from them, to disrespect them. It's not wrong. Wrong. Some goyim that are righteous have Ruach HaKodesh. Yov. You heard about Yov? The prophet of the goyim. Tzadik, big tzadik Yov was. It's a part of the Tanakh. The goyim had prophets. The Gemara say a goy that sits and learns Torah seriously with the love of Hashem can reach the highest level of humankind. No discrimination. If it would be a Jew, at least he would get a huge reward for it. It's a different story. Don't get me wrong. You misunderstood me completely. This person is going to get the worst punishment you can think of. Why? Murdering many innocent people has a very big punishment for that. I'm not talking about this. I'm just taking a point of a positive things that he used to do and applying it to us to show us that we that have to dance on the street being the children of God, most of the time ignore him completely. We only remember him when we don't have money to feed our children, or when we just got fired, or when we just got saved in an accident. For 5 minutes, it's time to wake up. It's time for us to wake up. To love God, it's not just to remember him once in a while, in a times of problem. To love God, the Torah says, you know what the Torah says to love God? Is to listen to him. That's our main mistake. Many people tell me, Rabbi, don't look at me like this. What do you think? You see me with the earrings and the ponytail and the tattoos. So what do you think? You're more religious than me? He says, I love God. You know how many times I speak to him a day? I love him. I know he exists. I know everything I ask comes from him. So I ask him, so why you drive on Shabbat? Why you smoke on Shabbat? The Torah says 12 times, you're not allowed to do it. No, you know, he begins to tell me all kinds of excuses. The Torah says, always with no exception, when God refers to us, I want you to love me, I want you, what always he always say? La'asotam, to do, not just to believe, not just to memorize the Torah, to learn the Torah, to practice it 100%. More questions? Yeah.
In the video, the guy who saw there was dead and then the rapture. He was talking about the gates of the building.
The guy in my video spoke about?
The gates and buildings. What were they talking about?
Which one of my videos? I have few.
The one.
I can.
Fox that went to the heaven, he said, like.
I haven't been there. I don't really know how it looks yet. But I really don't know what he saw. He saw a gate. No, whatever. Yes. Yes. Whoever wants CDs, please don't get embarrassed. Like I said, free of charge, recommended with donations that we can give other Jews. Any more questions? No. Thank you very much and good night.